This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I'm Chase Ralston with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Blackman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Hey, welcome. You made it. Working Class Bowhunter Podcast episode.
Who knows?
Hey, how are you? 400 and something, some change. Whatever. You made it. You're here. Hope your deer season's going well. And it's not dragging you to the mud too hard. Just think there's still some time left. Yep. Don't beat yourself up because that's when you really lose. Stay motivated. What would Clint Casper do?
It's just getting good, guys. You're on the tip of the it's getting good.
As Ross would say, you just find the food. That's it.
Find
the food, guys.
That's all you got to do.
Scout from a distance.
Or a cheeseburger out there for me.
We'll touch on some late season stuff, I think, during this episode. Thank you for being here. If you have not yet, check out our YouTube, subscribe there. We just put out Austin's first traditional buck out there. We have the second one. We have our bear hunt coming to YouTube, a bunch of other stuff. We're actually just trying to make like kind of an effort with video.
Yeah. Super cool though. Super cool.
Yeah. And we're doing a giveaway. So if you subscribe and show us you subscribed and a screenshot or whatever, we put you in a drawing to win a HHA Tetra site, a Scent Crusher gear bag, or a Working Class Bowhunter swag pack. So, one in three chance.
Who doesn't like free shit?
That's right. I mean, come on. Also, new merch, new hats, new stocking caps, two new shirt designs. What else? New stickers.
New stickers. We got all kinds of new shit coming up, too.
Yeah, so. We're working on stuff all the time. We're trying to cycle new and old designs and all that. So, workingclassbowhunter.com.
We're trying to get new shirts and new hats in every couple months so we can keep it updated.
Yep. Keep it fresh. Keep it fresh. The podcast is presented by HHA Sports. You know HHA. We talk about them all the time. And they have provided our listeners with a code, WCB15, to save yourself some money if you're wanting to become part of the single pin family or upgrade maybe to something different. Maybe you want a dovetail for adjustability. Maybe you just want to change things up.
Yep.
Lifetime warranty with their dropaway rest and their sights. Pretty damn awesome. Also, Scent Crusher. The gear bag is probably our number one tool there.
Oh, yeah.
Convenience, mobility.
and it works. Loophole optics. Love our rangefinders. Our 10x42s is what we rock here in the Midwest.
Oh yeah.
As Michael said on that podcast, eliminate the feeling of FOMO, fear of missing out. See what's going on from a distance.
There you go.
It helps the long sits when you're sitting there shoving peanut M&Ms down your suck hole. You can see what's going on 200 yards over.
Peanut M&Ms, the loudest candy you can fucking
eat.
That's
what I Yeah, the rapper, you're just over there chucking them. They're hitting your teeth as they're going in, making all sorts of noise.
Throwing them up in the air, trying to catch them.
Yeah. Also, Thermoseat, code WCTS on Thermoseat's website. We also have working class Bowhunter Thermoseats on our website with our logo on them.
Go buy one.
That's cool. We're like official. Help your butt. Stay warm and stay in there. So while you're throwing peanut M&Ms down your suck hole.
And your ass will be warm.
You can be comfortable while you do it. Also, Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors, Elite Archery, Big Tine, and Old Barn Taxidermy. Great partners there. Gator Outdoors code WCB10. I think the WCB 2020 code will still go through January, and then we'll have a new code, of course. And there you go. Thank you to our partners. Appreciate it. And thanks for listening to our ads.
And that's what we appreciate.
We appreciate that, too, sitting through our ads.
We appreciate you for doing that.
Yeah. Appreciate you appreciating us. You got a veteran shout-out?
Yeah, I got some appreciation more coming.
All right.
This is sent in by Haley Gabler. The veteran is JT Gabler. The branch is U.S. Coast Guard. Says, JT is my husband and is currently active duty in the United States Coast Guard, going on his 6th year. For the last few months, if he and I are in the car, the only thing playing is your podcast.
Ooh, sorry.
Real That's nice. Cool.
Oops.
Including our 16-hour road trip to Colorado for our anniversary.
Oh, my God. Sorry. For the anniversary, they're playing us, knuckleheads.
Hey, she's tough. She's tough.
Yeah.
He has been hunting really hard this year and putting in a lot of time in public land while we're stationed in Iowa. He has had a really tough season with stolen stands, losing a deer, and being gone for work during almost all of November.
Dang.
But he won't give up as much as I want him to. So you can spend more time at home. Thanks, guys. Thank you for submitting that, Haley, and thank you for your service, JT.
Thanks, JT. Yeah, appreciate you, man.
Losing a deer and your stands, but
Haley, you're a trooper. Man, he was just like, I don't care about your feelings. We're listening to Working Class Bowhunter on our way to our anniversary
for 16 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
woof.
Well, they probably go do what she wanted to do there anyway. So.
It works out.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a compromise.
Compromise.
Levels out.
Hopefully they weren't going there like during
hunting
season.
What I'm talking about.
Well, we can assume, right? It's our show.
Yeah.
But if you're a hunter and you get stationed in the state of Iowa.
That works out.
Yeah, right.
That works out pretty good.
Well, cool. Thank you for your service, sir. That's awesome, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate the support. Well, cool. On to the podcast. Of course, you know our voices, but we have a guest in studio this week, Mr. Todd Anderson.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for being here, man.
Absolutely.
We just became buds over the last few weeks, and I'm like, hey, I got a podcast. You want to come talk? And you're like, unfortunately, I know about your podcast.
And no, I don't want to talk.
No, I don't want to talk.
No, I don't want to talk to you.
Hey, getting in and talking about big deer, why not? I mean,
it's easy.
It's the perfect thing to do.
And you brought some big deer.
I brought a couple big deer. I got really lucky this year.
Yeah, they're kind of really big. Yeah.
I mean, luck only goes for like maybe one deer every now and again. Yeah. Once you bring in like... three, four studs, it's like consistent, you know, it's starting to add up that it's more than luck. So.
Yeah, he's got three big ones and a huge set of sheds.
Yeah. So we'll get in.
You gotta be really good or the luckiest son of a bitch I ever met.
If it is luck, man, I'm going to hang out with you a little more.
He makes his own luck. Don't let him fool you.
Oh, that's part of it, man. But no, I appreciate you coming here. First time ever podcasting?
First time ever. This is it.
How does it feel so far?
Number one, it's going good. I like it.
Hadn't really said nothing yet.
It sucks. I'm out.
Yeah. It gets better once you drink a few more beers and you're like, all right, there it is. There's the hunting camp talk.
Yep. I can do that.
But no, man, who are you? Todd Anderson. You're from Illinois, and that's all the more direct we need to get about that. But
sure. Live in the Quad Cities. Been here my whole life, born and raised.
Yeah.
Moline. And got into deer hunting when I was 17 years old. And it's just been one of those things that, you know, once it gets its hooks in you,
yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, you were hooked like, right out the gate, or right take a little gate. Bit, really?
Did you kind of like get into it yourself, or did you have someone get you into it?
I mean, the story is my parents, neither of them were really outdoorsy people, but my mom's parents had a camp up in Bagley, Wisconsin on the river, and we'd go up there fishing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, when I was 16, we went down to Lake Fork for spring break bass fishing. And his stomach was bothering him the whole time. And when we came home, he actually ended up finding out he had pancreatic cancer. And he passed away 3 months later.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those quick deals. But at his funeral, one of his best friends was like, "Hey, Grandpa was talking about getting you out this fall and going hunting with us. Mm-hmm. If you're interested, you can come out to our farm and do some deer hunting." And he said, "I don't want you out there with a gun, but if you want to buy a bow, you know, we'd love to have you out." And I said, "Sure, that sounds good."
Awesome.
Yeah, so I got out there and did it a couple times and had a good good experience and just grew from there.
No kidding.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, so at 17, just kind of went after it, huh?
I did. He had a nice farm. It was a little bit further north from the Quad Cities, but ended up, you know, he had a bunch of family out there, so you know how it is with pieces that you don't own or you don't have control over. Yeah, right. Bumped pretty quick. And
you got to do the political dance and all that.
So I ended up moving over to one of the ladies at work. She had 5 acres of her backyard, basically just touched into a big piece of timber, and ended up going out there and shooting a couple deer.
Boy, those are nice spots.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
So how did you... You know, at 17, and we don't got to get into how old you are. I mean, times have changed, you know, even from when I started hunting. But then do you remember how, like, you got your first bow and what was the decision process there? Or did you get a hand-me-down or how did it all work?
No, I went out to I did have one good friend, my buddy Nick I played football with. He was into hunting. And he was like, you know, there's a sports center, out Easy Living down in Milan. And went down there, shot a few bows, and found one that felt good. And it was an old Browning Midas, maybe. Does that sound right?
Yeah, like a Micro Midas.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, this is back in...
Or maybe there's a Midas and a Micro Midas then.
Might have been.
I have like a Micro Midas in my garage with the bow fishing reel set up on it.
Yeah, this is like 95 or something, so it's been a few years.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he kind of got me set up on it, and then shot that bow for a while, got into a Matthews when I started getting a little bit more serious, and it's just kind of been from there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I was just curious because I know we do have some newer hunters listening and stuff, and just that way they can, I don't know, might be able to compare some notes. And
well, the options today, there's so many more options.
Yeah. It's crazy, yeah. And,
you know,
they're all good, though.
They're all good, and the internet is a powerful tool in trying to research that stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they're all good, and it's fun to act like they're not.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like razzing each other.
Oh,
like,
yeah. You got to razz each other.
I would literally shoot any bow. Like, they're all efficient. They're all good.
Oh, yeah.
It's just where you feel is your home or what you like and what you want in a bow. But it's like the Chevy Ford argument.
Oh, absolutely.
For sure. I mean, the worst bows today are way better than the best bows from 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I don't know if you've heard our recent jokes about... For some reason, our jokes about Gleaner combines, comparing them to cheap bows, is just for some reason really funny to people. Probably because it's relatable to the Midwest. But every time we talk about like something high end or not high end, I just want to make a Gleaner joke now. Even though I have never even been in a Gleaner combine, have no reason to hate them at all.
I was waiting for you to like compare a bow to a Gleaner.
Oh yeah,
I just was waiting for it.
Hell, you don't even see them anymore.
Oh, you see them broke down.
They're out there.
Yeah, they're out in the field.
Guys are still buying
what you call a field ornament.
Blue glass and all. They're out there.
Blue glass and all. And but most of them have the little 45-degree auger all cocked out.
Oh, yeah. Full water. But anyway.
Don't make no sense.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a new bow. So if you're someone that's a newer hunter and you just got any bow, I say nothing wrong with a new bow, any bow that you can get your hands on and use and practice with is going to be just fine. So don't beat yourself up over brands or anything like
that. Right. I mean, you honestly did the best way. You know, go down, shoot a bunch of them, see which one feels comfortable to you, you know?
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the key. Like, you got, just like you end every podcast, go shoot your bow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get out there and use it.
Yep, yeah, for sure. Right. So how long, you're 17 when you started, you got your bow. And I'm kind of just building up your timeline here because I'm fascinated by big buck killers, consistent big buck killers, because at what point from 17 did you kind of feel like I'm kind of figuring out this big buck thing, or did you kill a big buck and then from there it clicked a little bit, or how did your big buck journey kind of build into what it is now?
Well, the first deer I killed was, you know, he was small. He might've been, he was a 1.5 or 2.5 year old. He was a tiny little basket rack.
Mm-hmm.
And, super excited. I mean, that deer got me super jacked up, right? Obviously, everybody's first buck.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It doesn't matter how big they are.
Yeah.
And so, got that under my belt. And then, you know, Saturday mornings back in the day, you'd get up. What do? You flip on the TV and you're watching guys shooting 150, 160-inch deer. And you're going, man, that's pretty cool. I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, looking at the magazines, figuring out where we're at, it's like, well, shit, I kind of won the lottery. This is... ground zero for big bucks. Yeah, like, yeah. We're in the golden triangle. You know?
I live in the best spot for whitetails.
Right, exactly.
By chance.
Exactly. And so kind of lucky, too. I mean, a couple years into it, when I killed those deer, my dad came out. And my dad, all he's ever done is just worked, you know, never had any hobbies. And he came out with me and helped me track the deer and get them out of the woods. And, like, he was like a little kid. Like, he was excited about it, too.
Yeah,
and I was
like, well, shit, that's cool.
I'm going to get my dad a bow for Father's Day. So I got him a bow, and so I got him into hunting with me.
That's cool.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and so we actually ended up getting a piece of ground and that we can hunt on our own. And we've just gotten to the point where, you know, you start out shooting 120-incher comes out, and you're like, oh, shit, here he is. This is
stud.
My, this
that's
is
a monster.
Yep. I'm about to be famous.
Yeah. World record. North American whitetail.
For sure. And then you get up to him, and you're like, okay, maybe he's not quite as big as I thought he was.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, you just stair step up. I mean, I've been doing it
climb
for
the ladder.
20-some-odd years, and when we got our ground that we're on now, it had some pretty good deer on it that hadn't had much pressure before we got it, and I ended up shooting about 164-inch mainframe 9 with a kicker off his G2, super like 6-inch bases, just a real big
monster,
studly old buck, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And had no idea what I'd killed at that moment. You know, I mean, I'm out there with this guy that I was kind of running around with at the time, buddy, you know, hunting buddy guy.
Yeah.
And we're struggling to get this thing on the back of a ATV, and like I didn't get any good field photos, and I'm just like kicking myself over it now. But that deer pretty much lit the fire for big bucks in me.
Gotcha.
Know? And that was in 99.
Yep.
And killed him.
So is this the same piece that you're still hunting to this day?
It is now, yeah.
Very cool. Yep. Very cool.
That's
sorry. Awesome to be able to, like, invest your heart and soul. And I was talking to my buddy today. I didn't mean to cut you off
that's
a little
okay.
bit. But with property, I was talking to my buddy. I'm like, man, I've never had a place. It's kind of like I've never had a consistent relationship. Like, I'm always, like, it's going to end any day. Like, this girl's right. going to leave me, and I'm going to be heartbroken. So I'm almost, like, hesitant. It's hard for me to, like, pass bucks that are 150 at 4 years old, and I'm like, oh, he could be 170 next year, because I'm like, man, I always feel like I'm in an uneasy relationship with a chick, and she's going to leave me, and then I'm starting from ground zero. But so that's cool that you've been able to dump your heart and soul and put efforts into a piece. You
yeah,
know
but
what
don't
I mean?
Feel special for having trouble passing a 150 because, I mean, there's
oh,
a
no.
lot
no,
of years
no.
that, you know,
oh, I know.
A mid-140s comes out and you're like, God damn, I want to shoot that deer.
Right. Oh, so yeah. But I'm not apologizing for it, I will
yeah.
say, because as Dan and Sean, they're out here from out east, I'm like, I like to shoot shit, man.
Exactly, right. exactly, right. yeah.
But that is cool, though. Basically, I'm just saying, like, you know, that's what it takes. Like, you've big deer don't come from nowhere. Like, you have to put work into it. So I'm complimenting you, because from where that is, it's like you realize at that point, like, man, I can do this and build up into something, which is awesome.
Well, and true, that accomplishment of owning your own property has to be like shooting a 180-inch deer, you know, just saying, hey, this is my piece of ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be exciting to own your own ground also.
It's nice. It's good and frustrating at the same time, you know, because you see what's out there and you think, okay, man, the potential for this place is, you set a bar somewhere, right?
Right.
And when it's not hitting that bar, you're going, God damn, what am I doing wrong? What's the problem?
Yeah,
are my
yeah.
neighbors screwing me? Am I doing something wrong? What's the deal?
Right.
And, you know.
Because you're confined to your spot.
Totally.
At that point. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, I kind of at times think guys that have 3 or 4 spots that they can go bounce around to, maybe that's the right approach. I don't know. But, you know, I'm, like you said, I'm committed to this one spot, and it's been fun. And it's neat to be able to tell the story of a specific buck.
Right,
like,
right.
Absolutely.
You know, I've got one deer that I've got sheds off of for like 6 years in a row.
That's cool.
Yeah. That is
just
cool.
a neat thing.
I think a different level of anxiety. I don't know if you, I think we all experience deer hunter anxiety to a point on different levels, but that to me, I feel like that would be stressful because you're hoping, you know, you pass him on, you're like, man, I hope he makes it. Like gun season comes around. You're like,
totally.
Oh man, make it through. So in order to do that, it takes a ton of work, a ton of commitment, a ton of emotional ups and downs.
Yeah. Well, and I'm bow only. All I do is archery.
Really?
So every year when it's shotgun season, every shot I hear is like, oh, there's another giant that just got shot.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like nobody's shooting a doe. In my mind, everyone's a big buck.
Right.
Getting killed.
Every one of them's a 180.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, shit, starting over.
I get that.
Yeah, everyone's in the woods. Austin is an Austin Chandler out there.
Yeah, everyone's calculating.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's maybe the problem is, and we're kind of razzing gun hunters a little bit, but we're not for real. Like, it would be different if you knew every one of them, had put in the same amount of work that you put in.
Right.
And you're like, okay, I have less of a problem with a guy who put his heart and soul and emotion and ethics into harvesting a buck with a shotgun at 100 or 10 yards, whatever he blasted right. at, versus the dude who willy-nilly went out and hit your 180-inch buck in the neck on a drive and got lucky, and then he lobs the antlers off and puts them in his garage.
You know, it's almost more frustrating. There's been so many 200-inch deer killed off of my farm or around it
mm-hmm.
as 120-inch two-year-olds or 130-inch two-year-olds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just the guys that are killing the... Listen, I've got nothing against the people who go out and fill their freezer. No problem at all. Shoot whatever you want to shoot. Everyone has that right.
Yeah.
But when you sit there and say, well, this is my second buck. I killed a 110-inch 8-point, and now I just killed a 140-inch 3-year-old. You know, it's like, gosh, come on.
Yeah.
Did you shoot any does? No?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's just, it's like management. It's a management buck. It's
right.
It's like, ah, man, we're not in Texas.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's, I don't know, does that get to you a little bit? And you're like, coal buck. It's like, man, we're not in South Texas, man.
Just depends on their age. I mean, that's cool if you shoot a 120, but as long as he was six.
He's nine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 6 years old. That's right. I mean, I've got a couple buddies that come in every year and hunt with me, and it's always, you know, August, September. Guys, here's the lineup, okay?
Here's the lineup, yeah.
You know, this deer, green light, this deer, red. Like, I had one buddy, Daniel from Virginia, come in this year, and he's hunting with me, and we're texting back and forth, and he says, hey, Scrubby Browse came by. Here's a video. And, I mean, the deer, I'm like, dude, that deer's like 8 yards from your stand. What are you doing? He's like, isn't that one on the don't shoot list? And I go, that deer's 6 years old, and he's a 150. Shoot that thing. Like,
he's shoot like, that motherfucker.
Yeah, he right back. He's just, fuck.
Fuck.
But those guys are committed to the program, you know, and I mean, that's the only way you get really big deer is if you just don't shoot them when they're not really big.
Yeah. Right. But it also takes, you know, you've climbed the ladder to get to that point.
Absolutely.
And that's something we've talked about in recent episodes, you know, with Ross killing his giant and then Chandler killing two mature bucks with his longbow. And we're talking about kind of the turning point where, you know, I feel I'm to the turning point now to where, like, I need to be, and it kind of going back to property, it's like, I'm at this crossroads a little bit. It's hard for me to know, like, man, I'm going to be looking for a new spot next year, but there's a 100, like, my buck sitting right here is 148 inches. He's 13 inches wide. It's hard for me to pass that deer. And I'm like, I want to, but I can't.
Yeah.
And then I get along him.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, so, but it takes a different experience level and time out in the field and it's a different mindset. It's almost like the progression of an experienced bow hunter.
Yep.
I don't know if everybody goes through that or if it's just my own mental battle that I'm kind of dealing with.
You end up, honestly, it's like Cole Young said in several podcasts. I mean, he was okay going dry for several years before he kills.
You have to be.
I mean, I went dry for 4 years.
Well, then also, not that this is like a pressure that's – it feels like it's going to weigh in more in the future, but maybe it won't. It's like, well, now we're a outdoor hunting production.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, how does it look pressure. If I'm on a podcast, Eric's on the podcast, Doug's on the podcast, Ross, and we go 8 years of podcasting and none of us kill any deer.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that's going to force me to shoot 120-inch deer
right.
from here for the next 8 years. That's not what I'm getting at. But
I say you have a lot of pressure building in the back of your head that's keeping you from – which that's fine. I mean, that's how it is, and it's cool. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, it's the same reason why you see Kip Campbell on there shooting 120-inch deer. Not saying that that's what I'm going to do, but it is there.
The pressure's there.
You take the camera away. Do any of your sponsors do any of them be like, hey, you guys need to put deer on the internet or, you know, things like, do you have to produce?
Nope.
Yeah. No, I mean, so.
That's the thing. Yeah.
You don't need to.
I don't need to, no.
Yeah, but I get it because, like, for a long time I was the same way. Like, one of my good buddy Jimmy, he hunts right around me as well. His wife, 1 year I didn't kill, and it was the first time in, like, 5 or 6 years I didn't get a buck. She's like, what are you going to do? You didn't kill a buck. And I'm just like, shit. You know, it didn't feel quite right. You know, so then that next year. 130-inch 8-point comes out, and he got smoked.
You feel that pressure. It, like, you're a killer, aren't you? So why aren't you killing?
Exactly. Yeah. I wonder if there's, like, like non-hunter pressure. You get a deer yet? It's like, fuck you, man. No.
Hey, did you catch any?
Yeah, didn't catch any.
You catch any? Yeah, one of these.
Piss off, Lou.
Nah, but it's not, like, a thing that we dwell on, but it's also, like...
It's in the back of your mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe a little.
Like, it's in kind of mind.
But that's, like, a new thing for me lately.
Like, I haven't shot a whitetail buck since 17.
Yep. Mine was 16 until this year.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't even want to go down that road because it's not what it's about.
Right,
but
right.
But the point is to kill deer like this giant high 90s white-tailed sitting on the studio table. That is what you have to do. You have to be willing to pass bucks that in the back of your head, you're like, I want to zap that fool right in the heart.
Or whatever. Zap that prick right in the heart.
Zap that prick right in the heart. You know, you want to, but you gotta, you can't
no.
to make deer like this.
And I'll tell you, so I killed that big one in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And then I killed a lot of 130, 140-inch deer.
Yeah.
And then I killed a 170-inch 10 in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then I killed for 4 or 5 years. It was like 140, 150.
Yeah.
And you know, if you want to fill tags in Illinois, you're probably going to have that opportunity on those types of deer.
Mm-hmm.
And people around us were killing big deer, and I'm going, man, why am I not killing big deer? Why am I not killing a 180? That was like always my goal, was to kill like 180-inch typical, 200-inch non-typical in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was where I had set the bar.
Pretty awesome goals.
Well, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But they're achievable, you know, in mm-hmm. Illinois where we're at. And it was just always super frustrating to be like, you just keep pushing, you keep pushing, you just try to keep hunting harder and harder, and
yeah.
it's just not happening, and then you go, you know what? This is getting to be a little bit much. You get a little burned out, so you just back off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when you quit pushing, then all of a sudden you kill a 180 and a
exactly.
200 class deer.
Interesting.
Exactly.
So,
you know,
do you think it's because you've let the pressure off, the deer get their age, they get their maturity? Is that kind of what you're getting at with
part
that?
Part of it. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. These deer are not 3-year-old deer, 4-year-old deer. You know, you got to let them grow up.
Right, right. Do you, so, let's stick with whitetails for a little bit because
sure.
we're just so deep in the whitetail thing. So we're kind of skipping a
yeah,
hunt of yours.
Right.
But we will get that hunt.
Sure.
So let's just talk about pull that other whitetail up here. We have some giant whitetails in the studio right now for everybody listening at home or at work.
I bet the best part about this big dog laying on the table is – I see. It's got the landowner tag on it.
That's you know, I'm saving that.
Yeah, that's right.
So the buck you're holding was the first buck you shot this season.
Yeah, killed him on October. Well, first whitetail. Killed him on October.
Oh, first whitetail. Yeah, sorry.
October 30th.
Let's break him down. Let's talk
sure.
about what he is,
sure.
and then let's talk a little bit about him and how you killed him.
Okay, sure. So he is a mainframe 10. He's got a Sport G3. And then he's got a little extra coming off of his main beam on the inside.
That little kicker's cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Down in there.
I didn't even see it from the angle you were holding him at. That's
yeah,
cool.
That's super cool.
I had no idea he had it when I shot him. You know. So I got one picture of this deer on my farm, and he's walking underneath the camera. It's a spot where they kind of come up onto the road and cross it. And,
yeah.
And he's like literally like 5 feet in front of it. And saw the forked G3 and was like, well, that's an interesting deer. I didn't think much of him. It was a weird
sure.
animal.
Yeah.
And that's the only picture I got of him all
really?
Summer, all year. Yeah. And
man.
That was probably in October 21st, 22nd, somewhere in there. Well, my plan, I had a buddy in town, and my plan, there's a deer that I've got sheds off of that I brought in here.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really long main beam deer.
Yeah, 30-inch beam.
Yeah. Look unreal.
And I've got sheds off of him for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And so I've been after him, and he's just that deer that I really wanted to kill this year.
Yeah.
So I knew where he was kind of been hanging out, and it's a morning sit stand, you know. And
mm-hmm.
so late October, it's like, all right.
It's time to go.
And my girlfriend was going to come up and hunt with me one day this late October weekend, and was hunting mornings in the timber. She comes up. It was Friday, the 30th. And so I'm hunting the buck in the morning, and I'm like, okay, I'll shoot does in the evening.
Yeah.
Right? And she's in town, never been out on a deer hunt before, and it's like, let's just go somewhere.
Oh, never, ever.
Never, ever. Never even seen a deer, you know, in a hunting
oh,
situation.
Wow. Right, right.
So I'm like, well, let's just go somewhere where we can sit and see some deer.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we go down. I've got a food plot down on the south side, and it's just a bunch of brassicas and some winter wheat and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we go down there, and a bunch of does are piling out, and there's, you know, 20 or 30 deer.
By the way,
field.
We'll talk about some big-time food plots here
okay.
after the podcast.
Yeah. Sounds good. But there's a bunch of does out feeding and a couple of small bucks. And, you know, it's fine. It's the time when the smaller deer are like, hey, it's ladies' night. Let's go.
Right.
Let's go, right?
Hey.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They're going to the club.
They're
having
a good time here.
I wish I had that song on cue right now. We don't own the copyright, but I play it anyway.
Exactly. So they're out there chasing does around and stuff, and it's getting towards evening. And, You know,
is she freaking out about this right now, like seeing all this, or is she kind of
like, you know, you guys know how it is where there's like a doe's out in the field feeding, or there's like 10 does out in the field feeding, and then next thing you know, they're all looking back in the timber and they're mm-hmm. like, oh shit, what's coming out?
All their heads pop up and they're looking.
You're just like, oh boy.
Exactly. Here we go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're making like, Play-Doh snakes.
Yeah. Play-Doh snakes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then a 2.5-year-old pops out, you know, and you're like, great. And the 2.5-year-old walks over and he's just kind of giving the does a stink eye and then gets about 10 yards away from him and pops over at him and chases
Bumps
him around
him
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sniffing butts.
Yeah. And
she's like, there's a buck, shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she's like, why are they so mean to the does?
Like, hey, listen, it's reality.
How it works, right?
It's how we want to be to you, but we can't. Society says we have to behave.
Damn, Kurt.
Oh, I mean. So they were doing that, you know, there's three or four small bucks and a bunch of does, and then it's getting towards evening, and next thing you know, every deer in the field picks its head up and just looks, and there's just this little dip in the field, and it rolls into the timber,
mm-hmm.
and the timber drops down into this creek bottom, so it just kind of, it's rolling off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And every deer's looking over there, and next thing you know, this dude pops out, and I'm like, that's a pretty good buck. And he walks over, and I'm like, turn on the, and we had a video camera, I said, turn on the camera, and so she turns it on, and you see one of the smaller bucks walk over, and then he pops into the screen. You're like, ooh, he's a lot bigger than these other deer. and you can see just, you know, the aggression in his posture. And he walks this one buck out of the field, and then he goes over to the field edge, works a scrape, and he's probably about 80 yards away at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a doe like 25 yards right in front of the buck. We're in a ground blind.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And
I was envisioning a tree the whole time. But yeah, I guess first time deer hunting, yeah.
You would shoot her up in a tree.
35-foot hang on.
Hey, you got to go up first because you got to sit in the top.
I'm on my stand. Exactly. Get
in mine, step on my seat, and then hop in that. That's your – yeah, okay. That makes a lot more sense. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So he goes over and he's working the scrape, and then I've got my rangefinder and I'm going, okay, this doe's at 25.
Mm-hmm.
The edge of the field is 40. If he pops back out and he walks down this edge, I'll just shoot him when he walks out. He's got to clear this doe. I'll drill him right there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching him make the scrape, and he's in there working it for, I don't know, it seemed like 5 minutes, but it was probably only a minute or two.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is he going to go down in the timber or is he going to come back out? Well, he stops working the scrape, and then you can see him shake his head and he shakes his body, and he's just totally calm, you know. He turns and he comes back out, and I'm like, all right, this dude's done. And
so what's her mindset at this point? Is she just filming and not really thinking too much, or
are you kind of telling her
like does she know you're all pumped up, excited?
Well, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but anytime I'm hunting and a big one shows up,
mm-hmm.
like I don't get nervous, I don't get shaky, I don't like think about anything but where's the opportunity to put an arrow in this deer?
Right,
you know what I mean?
That's a turning point going back like to experience, I think. Like you've been there before. You're kind of like you've trained for the moment.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I've been in enough situations where I know if he gives you a shot, you better take it because don't wait for him to come closer or give you a better leg. Like, if you feel confident in what you can do with that shot, you better take it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm in my head running all the scenarios through as he's walking down this fence line or this food plot line between the grass and the food plot. And mm-hmm. like I said, as soon as he passes this doe, he's at 40. And he walks down and he gets right behind the doe and he turns and comes straight at us. He comes out to the doe. I'm like, oh shit, he's going to give me a freaking chip shot.
Yeah.
So he walks out and the doe, she scampers off and he comes out, turns broadside. I was drawing, whapped him. And
how close?
24 yards, I
think. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jesus.
And he jumped. I shoot him, and he, like, takes all four legs, jump up off the ground, and he, like, does the mule kick, and then he runs off, and you can hear him crash, and I'm just like, fucking ass!
Just screaming.
Yeah, I was excited. I was pretty worked up.
Yeah. Did she have any, like, clue what just happened as far as, like, the caliber of whitetail?
No, none whatsoever. I mean...
That's cool, though.
If you're not a hunter, you
don't know.
You
right,
know,
right.
She knew she just shot a deer.
She's, like, on her phone. She's on her phone, just like... Cool.
But she's pretty quick to
scrolling Tinder looking for a different boyfriend.
Yeah. Doing one of these.
This guy's insane.
this guy's worked up over a deer.
This guy's a fucking lunatic.
I bet she catches on pretty quick that this is a big deal.
Well, I just didn't know.
She did. So I shoot this deer, and I'm like you said, I'm all jacked up.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, so now what? And I was like, well, we're going to give him a couple minutes here.
Because
he runs out of the field, jumps a fence, and I hear him crashing down through the timber. And there was, like I said, there's like 30 deer out there, so they're all crashing through the timber. And I'm like, is he down? Did he keep going? I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah. Right.
So we got out, and like I said, my buddy Daniel was there. So we went back up, and she was cold, and she gets cold easy, right? So we go back to the cabin, and Daniel comes back up, and we pull up the camera, and we run the footage. And, I mean, it's, like, perfect, you know? So I'm like, get the four-wheeler. Let's go get him.
Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, and he's like, how big do you think he is? And I'm like, man, I don't know, 162, somewhere in there, 164. And so we go out there, and we get him, and he was a lot bigger than I thought. 179 and 7/8.
That's,
that's a great problem.
Man. Yeah.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, way absolutely. Better mass, and his brow tines are pretty strong.
And bladed. His brow is perfect.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
It's like a knife
handle. The reason why I was asking about your old lady, I didn't know if you were kind of giving her the business, like, okay, this buck is really big. Like, you know what I mean? Or you're in the moment, focused.
You know, like I said, I thought he was a 160s, 158, 162, somewhere in there.
Yeah, with that one trail cam picture you had of him.
That's it.
Right.
And
a shitty picture at that.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't a good one. So I didn't think he was going to be the highest scoring deer I'd shot to that point.
Yeah.
Right. Which maybe that's good because
That was your biggest buck at this whitetail.
I killed a 178 a few years ago, and then this one's 179 and 7/8. Damn. So close, but he's a little bit
so much better to go that way versus the opposite. I just killed a 180 and it ends up being a 162.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Well, I mean, I've done that.
You know, going back to the hunt that we skipped over, you know, going out west and seeing these mule deer, these big framey mule deer.
Yeah,
they screw you up so bad. You come back and you're like, ah, that thing's not that big.
So that's would that be like the next hunt that you decided to go on?
No, actually, that was October 4th, 5th, somewhere in there. It was like the first week of October.
Okay. So I just wanted to stick on the whitetail thing while we're already on the whitetail thing.
Sorry,
No, you're fine. You're fine. So do we go to the mule deer now, and do we come back?
Let's go to the mule deer.
This is your
Let's end on the big boy.
Let's go. Ross is all jacked up on mule. Ross has got a mule deer boner. Yeah, he's all worked up on his mule.
I want one.
He's over here.
Don't get so vulgar.
I'm telling you, man. I want to hear the story on this big boy.
Yeah, so I was just whitetail mode. That's why we went straight into the first one. But congratulations.
We're going to dance a little bit.
I appreciate it.
We're going to dance. So
I'm good with that.
This mule deer you brought in is... framey as all out, man.
Oof. I thought it was fucking fake when you brought it in.
Yeah, it looks like somebody made it. It's giant. It's just
huge.
Framey.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. So, obviously, have you hunted mule deer in the past? Is this the first mule deer hunt? Like, what's the layout there?
Nah, so part of, you know, how I touched on being a little bit frustrated with not killing giant whitetails when I felt like I should be back years ago.
Yeah.
You get a little bit burned out. You want to maybe... focus on something else.
Change it up a little bit.
Yeah. So, but mule deer have always just been that one thing that's like, you see them in a magazine or you see some guy like Randy Ulmer holding some 240-inch velvet giant. You're just like, I want to do that. You
know? Why can't I do that?
That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, what about me? Sure.
The Randy Ulmer photos, I know exactly what you're talking about, man.
In some desert somewhere out there.
They're always
wherever.
Perfect, too.
Yeah. Yep. So that kind of got the fire lit for muleys. And, went out on a hunt, and, you know, Clint Casper's a badass.
Yeah, he's a stud. No bullshit.
Like,
he's all right.
For him to be able to go out there and do it all himself, I mean, that's the way to do it for sure if he can do it.
He's tougher than whale shit.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, to go into a different unit that I don't know what kind of homework he's doing on these units, but to say, I'm not going to hunt the same unit twice. I'm just going to go explore and then go and get it done.
I will tell you, before Clint killed the hunt he almost died on, went to that one in Colorado, he sent me the Onyx information of where he killed that deer, and you would not, I'm not kidding, dude, you would not believe the top of lines of where he killed that buck.
I believe it.
It is the
way up there.
Tightest lines. And I looked at it, I'm like, dude, I don't think I could physically do that. Like, it would take me a year and a half of cutting weight and then, like,
building muscle and
hiking,
just,
like, and building my leg.
Get your endurance.
I'm not kidding, man. I should have just zoomed in and screenshot it so you couldn't see any information just to, like, pull it up in moments like this. Like, look at the lines here.
That dude's a freaking animal.
Ross, do you remember when we went to Wyoming on our black bear hunt and Clint was in the car with us? Remember, he goes, yeah, I remember that rock face I got stuck on?
Yep.
He goes, it looked like that right there. And it was, and I'm like that?
Insane.
He goes, yeah, he goes, that's where I shot him and I got stuck up there.
I feel like
mountain
need,
goat stuff.
Yeah,
like, these guys are crazy.
You need rock climbing gear in order to get up
there. He's by himself.
Yep. If he would have fell, he would have died, I think.
For sure, yeah.
Well, he hired
a rock rappelling guy to after he hurt his ankle getting down. I don't know if you heard that podcast.
I hired a
rock climber, a guy who rappels and stuff. And the guy was like, hey, where do you, they're on their way in. He paid the dude, like, I don't know how much to help him get it out. He goes, whatever mountain or whatever canyon or drainage, I don't know the terminology. What was it? And he goes, oh, I killed it over in here. And he goes, you got to be fucking shitting me. He goes, we rappel in that area. And yeah, so pretty much the rock climber guy was like, you're dumb. Like, you could have died.
You're an idiot.
So anyway,
like, how the hell did you get there?
Spot.
Yeah. I don't know.
So what I'm saying is I don't take quite that approach. I mean, Clint's a badass. And
I don't think many people take that approach.
No, I mean, the do-it-yourself thing, super awesome, and would love to do it. Just my life right now, I don't have that kind of time. So I've been going with some outfitters and started out. I went with my dad and a couple guys out to Nebraska, 8-10 years ago. And we got, you know, it was one of these, why would we pay $5,000 to this guy when we can pay $1,800 to this guy? And you get out there and it's like, now I see
that's why.
So we went on this, this wild goose chase out there in Nebraska, and it was pretty country and it was neat, and we went and it was fun, but, ended up finding another guy in Colorado later that year. And, I was like, hey, what's your deal for next year? This and that. And he ends up calling me and he says, hey, I'm at a oil change shop right now, and I just got a call from a landowner. There's this big mule deer on his place, and we've got a voucher. If you want to come out next week and kill him, we probably could get it done. And I said, count me in. Well, I'm on my way.
I'm on my way.
Let's do it. Fantastic.
Yeah. And you listen to our podcast for 16 hours.
So I went out there. That kind of got me into the Colorado mule deer game. And one of the guys that was this guy's guides at the time, guy named Jeremy Fiscus, who actually has spun off and done his own thing now for a company called Sandy Hills Hunt Company. And, you know, some guys, like I'm sure all of you guys, from what I know, fall into this category, but some guys are just killers, you know? I mean, Jeremy is a fucking killer.
He's
killed 240 plus, 250-inch, 250-inch mule deer. Pull up his website. He's unbelievable. And
he's like a Colorado Devin Leonard then, our buddy that's like that in Utah.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, just year after year after year, gets it done with the bow. Unbelievable. And so when he started his thing, he was like, you know, I've got spots. If you want to come out and do it, you know, let's do it. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And so I've been going out there with him for 4 or 5 years. And the last three, he's had me with one of his buddies, Neil, as my guide. And we just hit it off well. And we've gotten it done all 3 years. So this is actually my fourth muley.
No kidding.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. But frame-wise, this one puts the other ones.
Is he the biggest score-wise, I guess?
You know what's funny is all of them score like 183 to 185.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't complain about that.
But they're all so different, though.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
See, that's what is cool. Like, there's different – I mean, you can categorize whitetails in different frames, looks, and all that. But I feel like muleys, it's more consistent to – like what their frame does. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Like, it does.
You have just have wide framey suckers that just blow your mind. It's hard to wrap your head around a rack that looks like that. Pull that sucker up, man.
You know, the twos and threes count a lot with those big splits.
Yeah.
But then you throw a spread on it like that. Like, God. You got to tell me what the spread is on that thing.
I wish I knew. I mean, I don't even know. Those guys put the tape to it when we were cleaning him up, so I didn't even catch what the spread is, but it's got to be 25.
Oh, it's got to be at least
that 25. Buck's got to be,
I don't know, 2.6.
That buck's probably 28 inside, man.
I was going to say.
He's over 25.
I
got whitetails that do just a touch over 20, and he's
wide. Yeah.
He's wide as shit.
Yeah. Huge twos and threes
inside
there.
Yeah.
So let's
inside a 180-inch deer.
So let's talk about this. I mean, how did you know about this buck going in with this guy? Or
So like I said, I'm kind of buddies with Neil down, so he'll shoot me pictures all summer long. Like, hey, check out these deer and that, and the different spots. These guys are professionals that are on them all year long.
They live
And that's kind of the thing is, you know, I don't like I was saying, Clint's doing an amazing thing, and I wish I had the time to do that, but I just don't. So I go out with these guys and. If I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take the time, I want to be hunting deer. I don't want to be trying to find deer.
Trying to find deer.
Yeah. So, you cut a lot of, I don't want to say waste, but a lot of time learning and then trying to find deer on ground you're unfamiliar with.
Because you don't have time to do it. You know?
So, I mean, I don't sit here and say I'm a good mule deer hunter. I go with really good guys that mm-hmm. get me in position to make a shot. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Hey, dude.
That's all right.
Why not?
But it's fun. It's a lot
absolutely
of fun.
It's fun.
And, you know, the thing is out there, it's all spot and stalk.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you're sitting there watching them in the fields and go lay down in these little sand hills. And
yeah.
Then you put a sneak on them.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you what, chasing muleys is...
Dude, it's fun.
It's so freaking awesome.
And, you know, I don't care if it's a 140 or a 180. Like, just getting on the ground and crawling through grass yeah. that's, like, oh, six yeah. inches tall and trying yeah. to creep and oh, make yeah. a game plan. It's, like, so these deer that we... that this buck was with two other big bucks that weren't quite as big as him, a couple of small bucks, and then, like, 30 does.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Those are the killers.
Yeah, they
a lot
were
of
out.
Eyes out there.
For
a lot
sure.
of eyeballs.
And they were out feeding in this sorghum patch that was about, you know, maybe not quite waist high.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd look out there and you'd see all these doe heads and then just, like, three giant racks.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd just be able to watch them from 2 miles away.
That's classic oh, yeah. Eastern Colorado in my head when I think of mule deer. I think of sorghum fields.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
And so these deer were out there feeding in the overnight, and then we'd watch them in the morning line out of this field, and they go into these sand hills, and mm-hmm. like we could watch mm-hmm. them to a point, and you'd see them drop in, and it's like, okay, if they come out, if they keep going, you'd see them come out the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and if they didn't, then you're like, okay, they're bedded in there somewhere.
They'll be there in the
right?
morning.
Yeah.
Well, no, then you go get them, and so they're going to bed down. That's the difference, you know. Is
yep.
you're picking out a deer, and you're saying we're gonna go kill that deer.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's fun.
Following back yeah. to his bed and
that's
getting
it.
Shot.
Exactly.
It's just yep. action.
That's it.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, so we dropped into this spot where they were all bedded at about 9 o'clock in the morning. We let them all get laid down and get mm-hmm. calmed down. And it was pushing it a little bit. We'd been on this deer for 2 days. We had an encounter with a different buck earlier in the hunt that
mm-hmm.
we ended up losing him, and we decided to go a different path.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drop in there, and like I said, there's, you know, 25, 30 deer in this little bowl that are all bedded in this grass. And we yeah. ended up blowing out every single deer except for this buck.
No shit.
Yeah. And got to 55 yards from him, and he stood up and took a shot at him. And, you know, my guy's right there next to me, and we're ranging him. And the thing is, they're bedded, right? So you get in position.
Yeah.
And then you're waiting for him to stand up. And, I mean, we were in an absolute perfect spot. And this deer, all you can see is this frame sticking up above
you're
this
staring at the whole time.
And just moving, yeah. just moving around. Ugh.
For like 30 minutes, we're just sitting there waiting for him to stand. And like you Man. Said, it's just like...
Okay, question for you then.
Yeah.
Are you calm now at this point? Because it's a mule deer. You've got money. I mean, you've got time.
That frame just...
In that frame. Or, you know what I mean? Are you whitetail giant calm? Like, you prepared for the moment? Or is the unique circumstance got you out of your...
Well, let's back up for a second. So I get out there the first day. The first morning, there's another buck that we were going after, and we ended up bedding him in some sagebrush that was about shoulder high.
Yeah.
And we ended up sneaking to him, and we got 50 yards, and that's kind of the distance. They don't like to get too much closer then.
Yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm.
And and I'm ready for that. You know, we go out there. And,
yeah.
And so I get out there. Shame on me. Didn't take any time to practice. We just grabbed the bow, went out there, get this deer bedded, get on him. He stands up. He's looking right at me. And Neil's going, if you want to shoot this deer, you better shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, if you want to thump. And so, you know, the second time he says it, I let her fly because I was just like pin on his right on his throat patch.
Yeah.
Let it rip. And you just see my arrow just like fishtail through the middle of his rack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So we go back to his shop, and he's a big time bow tech. He knows all that stuff. And,
yeah.
and we were looking at my bow, and the cams are out of timing. So he adjusted all my stuff. We went out the next day, shot about 100 arrows, got to feeling really good. And then we went back out, and then, you know, fast forward 2 days later, here we are inside of 60 on this buck.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wasn't nervous. Like, I'd shot enough, got the confidence back that I was like, okay, we're just going to drill this thing.
Yeah.
And so he stands up, and I put my 50 a little bit high on him, and let it rip. And Neil goes, oh, you fucking smoked him.
Mm-hmm.
And the deer, he had no clue. He pops out, walks like 2 steps, and he's just looking back at us.
After he'd already been shot.
After I'd shot. And I go, give me another arrow. Give me another arrow. He's like, you smoked him. I go, give me another arrow. So I knock another arrow, draw again, let it fly, and then you just hear thump. And he takes off. And I'm like, fucking in. It's just an adrenaline dump. Oh, yeah. It's just like, holy shit.
When you're in that moment before you shoot, you don't feel that adrenaline. Then once it lets go and it hits it, then it all hits you at once.
That's exactly right. But so, you know, as far as being nervous when that deer was standing up, that's the one thing about these mule deer hunts when you get in there. If the deer don't know you're there and you got time.
Yeah.
Like if you get in there and then you're just like, okay, I just knocked an arrow, I'm going to kneel down. Oh, shit, he's standing up. It'd probably be a little more stressful.
Mm-hmm,
but when you get in there and you're like, okay, he's 52 yards, 56 yards, whatever, you know, whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
And you go, he's going to stand. His body's going to be right there. I'm going to put my green pin right here, you know, because I shoot five pins.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I'm going to put this pin right there. I'm going to hold my this is how it's going to go down. You visualize it.
You're calculated.
Yeah. But I mean, you visualize it.
Yeah.
And when I'm on those hunts, at least for me, that's all I'm doing is just replaying that shot that I think is coming in my head over and over.
When you did it all the way out there on the drive,
right.
You know what I mean?
Like right.
You're doing it weeks up in your head. That goes a long way, I think. Mental visualization on how a hunt is going to go down in your head. And another thing, mule deer are more apt to stand there and look at you. If they catch you.
No question.
They'll stand there and look at you, and you can hit them with a rangefinder. You can adjust your sight. You can go to full draw. As long as you're moving slow, they'll just sit there and look at you like, what the hell's that? I mean, they give you a lot more time than a whitetail, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not even close.
For me and Eric, it's totally different. My guide, Corey Peterson, like almost amped me up more because he's like, we're about to go sneak in on. He's like, oh, we're fucking killing him. And then I was like, oh, shit, like it's happening. Like I'm about to do this. So I was pumped up when I did it. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah. Because you guys killed your mules in Nebraska.
Yeah, and the guy like pumped me up. He's like, oh, we're fucking, he's done. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, that's how mine was. Mine popped up out of his bed, and then we were up on a ridge above him, and he just sat there and looked at us. And I drew back. I was already draw back, and he pops up. And I run a kisser button, you know, and for some reason, I don't know what happened. I couldn't find it.
Because of the angle or something?
I was straight down. And then finally I shot and I smoked him. Like he ran 15 yards and died. And Corey, our guide, looked over me and goes, what the fuck were you doing? He goes, I thought that deer was going to run away. You sit there forever.
Well, you got to take your time, man. That's the difference between missing one and drilling it like you did.
But I said, though, you can get away with it on a muley.
Yeah,
you can get away with it.
It's a little different. But with Neil, the first 3 years, this was the third year I'd been out there. The first 2 years we killed the second day, both years on nice deer. And so it was like, hey, you know what? I don't want to just go out there and shoot a deer. Let's film this. Let's do something a little bit more, you know?
Yeah.
So that first buck we went on, we were filming that. And so we got that wild shot on film. And then we did a sneak on this deer, the day before I killed him, and it didn't go well. And so then when we had this deer bedded the next day, I said, leave that fucking camera in the truck. Let's go kill this guy.
That thing's fucking jinxing us.
I'm done fucking around.
Exactly.
We got to seal the deal. Leave the camera.
Fuck that camera, man.
That's right. That's right. So we got him killed and head back to Illinois. And then the funny thing is, so I've got an 11-year-old daughter, Georgia, that first year she wanted to go hunting. Like, she's been out in the blind with me a bunch.
Yeah.
Her 7-year-old sister, Hattie, she hasn't been out a ton, but she's been a few times too. But
So
Georgia wanted to go hunting this year. And I said, okay, let's do it. So coming back like October 6th, 7th, somewhere in there, youth season's coming up that weekend.
Right.
So I come home and I'm going around, I'm checking all the cameras. And on the south side of my farm, I've got this food plot that there's a gate hole coming out of the timber, and a lot of deer walk through there. Well, I've got a camera up right there, and I checked this camera, and the big one has been coming out September 30th, October 1st, October 2nd, 3rd, 4th. Between 4:30 in the afternoon, 5:30 in the afternoon.
Every single day.
Daggum. We're in the money here.
I'm like, because I'm thinking he's a 180s deer. I'm going, do I take Georgia in and ruin her? Let her shoot this deer, her first deer. Like,
ruin her.
Never get another deer like that ever in her
life. What a thing to contemplate. It's like,
right?
Yeah, right.
So I was just like,
do I have any other spots?
Oh, yeah. So we ended up going to a couple of different spots where she, same type of deal, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go where we know we're going to see a bunch of deer, make it fun.
Yeah, right.
So we did that instead, and I kind of laid off this deer, or the bigger deer, and ended up shooting the one we talked about earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you guys remember it got kind of hot in first week of November.
Yeah.
Yep.
So nope. In November. Yep. Yeah. It got hot. Yep.
So I kind of laid off of them for a little bit and had the girls that weekend, that first weekend of November, and then I had some more buddies coming in that second weekend. And, you know, after I'd shot that deer, the first deer, the 180 deer, when I shot him October 30th, that next night I didn't hunt because I wanted to get some pictures with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the pictures done, and then I went out Sunday morning, and that deer with the long main beams actually came in, and it was a real crazy deal where it was the first time I'd had a shot at him in 3 years of chasing him. He came in one time late season in a food plot and just didn't give me a shot, but
mm-hmm.
This was the first time I'd seen him where I actually could get an arrow in him, and he was with a doe, and it was a really windy morning, and was watching a bunch of deer off to one side. I turned around, looked back, and I'm in the middle of the timber, just deep in the timber.
Yeah.
And I turn around, and he's like 50 yards away with this doe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, shit, there's the big one. Like, and his tines are spaced out really far on his main beams.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really easy to recognize him.
So, oh, like, yeah. You knew right away that was him.
Instantly, yep. You know. And I'm like, shit.
Pretty recognizable.
For sure, yeah. And this doe, she just kind of meanders over, walks 20 yards broadside, goes over, cuts, gets down on the trail, and like, passes me, and I'm like, sweet, she cleared, now he's gonna follow right behind her.
This is gonna be a chip.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And so he comes down, and instead of like veering out to the right, he takes a hard left and kind of like walks behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm drawn, and I mean, he's
around you.
Yeah, he's inside of 30, you know, so I'm like drawn, and he's moving, coming kind of towards me, and I'm like bleating at her like rah, rah, you know, stop, hey. And he didn't even give a shit. He just kept walking.
Yep.
And there was like some honeysuckle behind me, little bush honeysuckle. And he gets behind there. And so I let back down the doe. Like, I'm between him and the doe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like 8 yards away, but behind this big piece of brush.
Man.
Shit. And he lets out like four of these like deep grunts. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And then he pops up. And
hey, that's cool.
How neat is that?
That's pretty neat.
That's neat.
And so then he pops out onto this trail, and I draw, and he stops, and he's looking up this path at the doe, and I'm thinking, okay, he's probably 30. So I have to cut. There's a branch in front of him, so I have to, like, dip down a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to rush the shot because I'm like, this is the deer I've been after for 3 years. I got to get it in him. And so 30, pin right on his shoulder, let it go, and it's just this thump. And zero penetration.
Mm.
And the doe runs off. He runs over to the doe. They stand there. They look back at me. And then they run down into the bottom. And I'm going, shit. I hit the shoulder. There's no question about
right,
it.
Right.
And it wasn't like the scapula. It's like that bone that comes off the scapula.
Yeah. Back. Yep. It's almost like part of his leg bone. In
right.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That short one that kind of runs.
Very, very hard.
Yeah. 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 Not a lot of give there.
No. So I got down, went over, found my arrow, and actually... The shaft, the end where the insert is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like the arrow like split and yep.
It's like when you shoot Doris.
You shove
you
that.
Shoot a steel target.
When you
kinda.
Shoot a yeah. steel target.
That's yeah. exactly
it's like,
right.
It's like you got a carbon paintbrush.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And, that's nothing more, nothing more that tells you that you're fucked.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
you look at that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
survey says.
What a sinking feeling.
Oh, it was terrible. And so, you know, I'm sitting there going, fuck, I could have shot 280-inch deer in the same weekend. That's just, well, I did shoot them. I just didn't recover both of them.
Right, right.
But we gave him 4 hours and came back out and then ended up getting on his blood trail and trailed him about close to a half a mile. And we were still coming across fresh blood. And I was like, you know, we're pushing him and he's alive. Probably want to just leave him alone. He was circling back into the middle of the farm. And I was like, we'll just let him be. And I'll just try to get on him later this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was kind of my plan was, again, to just hunt those areas in the mornings.
Right.
And then try to go out on the edges and shoot some does in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that, like I said, that was November 1st, I think it was, whatever that Sunday morning was. And kind of laid off of it for a couple of weeks. And then I had a couple other buddies coming in town that second weekend of November. And a friend of mine shot a nice 8-point Thursday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it was Friday morning. Either way, he shot one. We got that out of the woods, and then we were going to go hunting that evening. And same deal, I was going to go shoot a doe. And whatever the wind was, I knew where I wanted to go. And when we were leaving the cabin, because this deer that I shot last year, he was a typical, which I guess you'd call him a typical 11-point. six on one side, five on the other. Everything came off the main beam. There was no non-typical points.
Right.
And I figured him to be a mid-160s deer. And this year, he's got that forked G2 on the left. And I was like, man, if he could just grow that off of his main beam, he'd really be something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And so I was kind of torn on, do I really want to try to kill this deer or not? And so I was kind of staying away from his spots. And this was kind of a little bit in his range type of area where I was headed.
Gotcha.
And it was a spot I hadn't hunted yet. Mm-hmm. But I told my buddy, I was just like, hey, I hope I don't have to make a decision on whether or not to shoot a 180 tonight.
Tough out here.
Yeah, right? Just kind of joking more than anything.
Calls his shot.
Yeah.
And so, well, I was like, oh, I just listened to the Casey's Pizza Challenge one, too. I was like, order a Casey's tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to, that'd be awesome. Do the Casey's Pizza Challenge, kill a giant, and then message it to Kurt and tell him he's an idiot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just one up to you.
I would have loved that, by the way.
Sure. So I go down there, again, sitting in a ground blind, and a bunch of dough. I mean, this food plot, you know, I've kind of figured out recently, I've been playing around with it a lot, but I've kind of figured out how I like to set up my food plots to where I've got a strip of switchgrass around the perimeter of it to kind of hide them.
You know,
give them a little bit of feeling of security.
Yeah.
And so what I like to do is I'll drive past the food plot to where deer can see me in the truck. And if anything's in the food plot, it'll run them out. And then I can park and get in before they come back out. Right.
Mm-hmm. Just sneak right in there.
Try to. Yeah.
Smart.
Well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but
yep.
I'd rather spook them with a vehicle than walking.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know? Stuff they've never been ran by, down by. Or
exactly. They know once they get in the trees, they're safe.
Yeah.
And so I drove through, nothing was in the food plot, and I was like, all right, great. So I go and I park, and I get in the blind, and I'd actually just set the blind in there the week before, and I really didn't clear out any of the brush that was in there with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had one of those, like, battery operated hedge trimmers.
Yeah.
And I was just
talking like a ground blind or like an elevated blind.
No,
or
just like a pop up ground blind.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so I'm in there doing the hedge trimmers, just going, you know, and I'm cutting all this switchgrass and throwing it out of the blind, and I
not trying to be quiet.
Not at all. No, I mean it was a little bit windy, so I wasn't worried about it. But
yeah.
But it was like not trying to be stealthy. No, and I was trying to get it done before anything showed up. Right.
Is that the craziest thing though? Like I did that this year. I went into a stand I hadn't hunted, and I had to trim some stuff. And I'm making all kinds of racket.
Yeah.
And I look over, and there's a 110 inch. He must have heard me moving around and shit. And he's just sitting there staring at me.
Yeah, well, some of that stuff, crazy. Like with a saw or something like that, it's not like it'd be worse if you were talking.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
totally.
You're better off to just almost rip the Band-Aid off, hurry up and just get this shit over with.
I had, like, a handsaw, like, I'm sawing with, like, just wrestling leaves and all kind. He probably thought I was another buck.
I know a lot of guys who's killed deer, a guy who killed a few really, like, studs trimming shooting lanes and have his bow tied up to his pole rope and shoot him while he's trimming shooting lanes because I hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, I know what you're saying. You're trying to just, like, get it over with. And
yeah, so I wasn't being stealthy at all.
Yeah.
And I'm running that thing, and I get it cleared out to where I can move my feet around a little bit or reposition if I need to and something comes out. And
yeah.
And then I look up, and two does walk out almost instantly. And I'm just like, okay, that's good. And I'm sitting there thinking, tonight's tonight, I'm going to shoot a doe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And about, I don't know what it was, 15 does or something come out. And this is a food plot that's just under an acre. And so it's about 100 yards from where I'm sitting to the edge of the timber. And mm-hmm. it's about 80 yards wide. And these does come out, and they just feed close to the timber. And they're slowly working their way across.
Yeah.
But they're all the way down to the left. So they're, you know, 75, 80 yards away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And as the evening's going, some smaller bucks start showing up. And there was this one buck that he broke his main beam off. He's probably a 3-year-old. And he's just everywhere on the farm this year.
Yeah.
And he pops out, and he's chasing them around. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Big time. And he's out there chasing them around, and it's just a typical mid-November food plot hunt where things are just coming and going.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to pick out which doe I want. And they kind of get to the point where the bigger does are in the back. And so all the little ones feed up, and they're like 20 yards in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And the big ones are probably 35 or 40. And it's like, if it's a doe and they're not in a hurry, I'm just going to take a 18-yard chip shot when they give it to me or whatever. And so it's getting towards evening. The sun's getting down a little bit. And plenty of light left, though. a little doe pops out, and then a really big doe popped out. And I was like, ooh, that's a real, that doe's way bigger than the rest of them. I'm going to wait for her to come.
Thick old girl, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so she's halfway across the field, and then the big deer comes out, the buck comes out, and I go, this isn't a doe hunt anymore.
Funny how that
real
changes.
Quick.
Yeah, right.
So did you look over and he was there, or did like you see his rack first, or did he?
He was just walking out of the timber. Like, yeah, I mean, you can't help but see his rack first.
Right.
And a couple of buddies have asked me about it. Like, what did he look like? What was it like? You know, this and that. And the best way I can describe it is like, if you guys remember watching those shows where guys are down there in Texas and they're in those, you know, big shooting lanes,
yeah,
and 150 inch deer comes out and he just looks so much bigger than every other deer.
Yeah.
It's like that, except it's not a Texas deer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a world class whitetail.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he comes out and I'm just like, oh my God, he's really big. And he's making his way. I mean, the ball of does is literally right in front of my stand, mm-hmm. or my blind.
Yeah.
And he makes his way across the field. And again, I just get in that zone where I'm just like, rangefinder up, shooting every single doe. Which one's he going to come over and try to, you know, check out?
Yeah.
As soon as he's inside of 40, I'm definitely going to rip.
You want to be ready.
I'm ready. And he gets 3/4 of the way across the field, and this little 2-year-old buck pops out right where he came, and this deer sprints past him and blows every single doe up, and it's just like chaos in the field for like 30 seconds,
man.
And I'm like, oh shit, what's going to happen now? Well, that little buck stops like 28 yards in front of the blind. And the big one just lays his ears back and, like, stiff leg walks right over towards him.
You some bitch.
What'd you do?
Yeah.
You were running that scenario through your head, were you?
Not quite. No. But when he got to about 28, I let him have it and hit him in the shoulder. And looked like I got about half of my arrow penetrated in him.
Yeah.
And he just ran straight back across the field. And there was a bunch, you know, the little buck had scattered them all. So there's deer literally every direction from the blind out in front of me.
Yeah.
And this buck runs across and he stops on the other side of the field. And I actually pulled up my phone and I'm like videoing him as he's standing there. And I'm going, if he's standing there, I better get another arrow in him. So I just throw my phone down, get my rangefinder up. He's like 78 yards. I'm like, shit, that's a little bit of a poke for me. I'm not pinned to 78. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I'm like, can I stack the pins? Can I try to get this? You know, if he's going to walk off, I want to at least give it a shot to get another arrow.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, at this point, it's like you've already shot him, follow
Absolutely,
up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so...
just I had to make sure the people not half paying attention. He's already been shot.
Yeah, he's bleeding, and he's his head is low. He's hurt bad.
Get another arrow on him, if you can.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's my philosophy.
You got to try, right?
Hey.
If he's standing there.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
So I'm, you know, I'm getting another arrow out of my quiver. I'm knocking it, and I'm range finding him, and next thing I know... he starts walking to my left, and a little doe is out there, and she walks right in front of me, like comes back to me, and he's just like every step is a big limp, you mm-hmm. know, and he walks right back to 25 yards, and I drilled him again.
Oh, no. Are you kidding?
Swear to God.
Holy
and he didn't make it out of the
shit.
Field. Double longed him. He ran about 50 yards and piled up.
Holy Dang. Cow.
Unbelievable.
What?
Yeah.
So he was...
he was shoulder shot.
Shoulder shot. And
but
just...
it was lethal. I mean.
Okay.
Yeah,
the first shot was lethal.
The first shot was absolutely lethal.
He had half an arrow in him, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, half an arrow.
Definitely dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you're like in offside shoulder at this point pretty much.
Yeah,
is what
exactly.
It sounds like.
He's hurting and he's still going after doves.
Correct.
That's dedicated.
Hey.
Yep. But you know, that little one came in there and got everything all screwed up. And it's like, did he think, oh, another buck just came and poked me? Like,
maybe.
Nobody knew what was going on exactly.
That's awesome.
And,
wow.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Wild.
Had his mindset like the right way for him to come back.
Absolutely.
Dude, man, that is badass.
It was
man,
crazy.
That 2.5-year-old snuck up on me. I don't know where he went. But.
Yeah. It's like, hey, he's ninja
fighting. I bet you that'll never happen to you again.
I guarantee you it won't. I mean, that's just insane. I've never
that's
gotten a
fucking crazy.
So what are you thinking when he comes back? Are you like...
I'm like, let him come. He's walking this way.
Right,
I'm just going
right.
to let him come. And, you know, same thing. You know, you're in that mindset where you're still so zoned in on what's going on.
You,
like,
oh, yeah. You hammered him on the first one.
Yeah.
And now he's coming back in for another hammer.
At that point, I would be like, this is not happening.
That, well, like, kind of a little bit. That was running in the back, you know. But it's just like, okay, how close is he going to get? You got to inside of 30, you got to...
Were you amped up then, though?
Like when he's walking back?
Yeah.
I mean,
still in the zone.
I was, it was like Jordan shooting free throws down two, game seven. You know? Oh, I mean, like, yeah. You're just like, it's,
damn.
That's a good analogy. Well, I mean, he's already done the hardest part is getting the initial shot.
Yeah, right.
Now it's follow up and finish it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now exactly. he's saying, you want another one, bro? That's fine. Or pass
him the ball. Yeah.
Dude, so come in, smoke him again. How far has he run?
40, 50 yards.
And you can see him go down?
Oh, yeah. I saw him go down. I saw him. He just walks over to the edge of the food, runs. And as he's running, you can just see blood spraying out both sides.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this dude is done. And
you are fucked.
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you say, Ross?
You are so
this
fucked.
Deer is so fucked.
Yeah, it was over for him at that point.
So I want to know about, like, the walk up on this thing, because this thing is this is what whitetail dreams are made of.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So like I said, I was thinking he's a 180s deer, right? Mm-hmm. And like that was my dream, was to kill 180 class gross typical whitetail deer.
Yeah.
And so I'm already like, this is like one of those days that you just don't get enough of in your life. Like, I got to take this in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
by myself. So I ended up actually, I called Rachel and I was just like, I killed the big one. And she's like, way to go. Awesome. Enjoy it. You know, call me later.
Yeah. See you later.
I was like, yep.
Yeah.
And then I called my dad and I was like, hey, cause we work together too. And you know, this is a Friday afternoon and I'm like, hey, thanks for letting me chase my dreams. Cause I just killed a fucking giant.
Fucking giant.
And he's like, yeah, yeah. Okay. Good job. Uh-huh. And then I texted him a picture and he's like, wow, that is a really big deal.
Okay.
Hey, you weren't shitting.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it was cool. You know, I had that, one of the things that's great about deer hunting is the camaraderie, you know, is being around buddies.
The people you meet and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know that I've met any bad guys that are serious whitetail hunters. You know, they're all pretty
standard. To be honest
with you,
that's why
dudes.
We all started this podcast.
For
sure. Just kind of get together every week and bullshit about hunting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But so I had Josh and my buddy Nick were both out there in different spots. And it was cool that I was by myself and I got to go up and I got to sit there and have a minute with this deer and just be like, this is real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It was really fucking cool.
Yeah.
And so then, you know,
I gotta ask you something.
Yeah.
Cause I know I would do this and there's no shame in it. Did you cry?
I didn't cry.
You didn't?
No,
I would have.
I've lost some really close people in my life. My brother died a few years back and both my grandpas. And it was just like one of those things where, when really big things happen in your life, you just feel like a connection of like, how the fuck did a 200 inch class deer come out? I get an arrow in him and then he comes back and I shoot him again. Like, that's not an accident.
Yeah.
Right.
You know there's something else going on.
So there's some energy there that's influencing stuff.
There's
probably
a lot of shit running through your head at this point.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
I have to think though that you sat there and didn't say anything or for a little while.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, you know, it's just like, man, did this really just happen?
Right, and
you're trying to take everything in at this moment. Absolutely. You put your hands on this deer.
Absolutely, you know, and going back to that first big one I killed, that 160-some, just rushed through that whole process, you know?
Yeah. Hurry up and get him out of here. And,
Like, all right, we got him. Let's get him in the truck. Let's go. Yeah, oh, high fives and this and that. But then no pictures, no looking back going, you know, that 5 minutes that I just sat there and just looked at that deer, that was really cool. Like, I didn't do any of that with him.
Yeah,
So not doing it and realizing that I didn't do it since then has made me appreciate the deer that I kill a little bit more now.
That's really cool, man. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm all about that, too, man.
It's humbling,
like,
you know?
If a buddy calls me, like, dude, I just shot a giant or shot the big one, I'm like, dude, take in the moment. Like, don't rush down and go and get them. Like, call everybody you want to call right now.
That's
like,
right.
Celebrate.
And live it up. Like,
live it up.
Get down and then take a deep breath. Like, I took a video. The first buck I shot this year, I took a video of me just walking. I didn't even do nothing with it, just for my own personal thing of me walking. Like, man, right now, like, I'm the happiest as I get because this is what I live for. These moments, they're so rare.
Absolutely.
And they can only happen a couple times a year. And it depends on what state you live in. It can only happen once a year.
That's right.
And you're just engraving that moment into your mind.
Yeah, like, that was like the big one I shot. Me and Eric fucked around for, like, what, 20 minutes just staring at him.
Just sitting there and staring at him.
Holy
like,
shit.
Yeah. I honestly think, and maybe this is what you did, like, if I shot, this is literally what whitetail dreams are made of. I think I would lay down next to the thing and just, like, deep breath until I could just be like, man, I can't even imagine.
Where am I?
If I shot this deer, I'd sit down next to it. I couldn't even put hands on it right away.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. No, I just left him there for a little bit and just was like,
take everything in.
Yeah, give him his space for a minute.
Yep.
Just realize exactly what's going on.
Yep.
And, I mean, I got up, and then I just went back to the blind, and I was like, did he really loop over there and come back in? And like, so I followed his blood trail out, and I stood where he was standing and
kind of
replaying walked
everything.
It right back in.
Look like, back at your blind, just kind of yeah. like, what well, was he looking at?
And I've got yeah. a picture, actually, of him laying before I even touched him in the field where you can see the blind in the background. And
oh, cool.
It's pretty neat to me. You know, I know everything about that picture.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. very yeah. special, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So so I do all that, and I get right with everything, and then I jump in the truck, and it's probably getting to where – it's probably sunset, but there's 15, 20 minutes of shooting light left. And Josh was in this stand that is in the corner of this field that I can drive to. And so I just come tearing across the field.
Your buddy Josh probably like, what the fuck is he doing?
Yeah. So sorry, he gets he's like, what's going on?
He didn't
on?
Know you shot it?
He didn't know I'd shot that deer. I didn't tell anybody. No, I just pulled up and I was like, hey man, you seen any deer? He's like, yeah, he just blew like 30 out of the field. What are you talking about?
And I
was
you
like,
just pull up to his stand and roll down the window. What are, yeah. you, what are you doing?
Blaring like AC/DC or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
What are you doing up there?
Dude, I was honestly going to say that joking around, but I'm so glad you actually
That's
did.
That's hilarious.
Absolutely. So he jumps
What's up,
in.
Pussy?
And, yeah. And so he jumps in and,
I just hope if one of these guys here, if I shoot this caliber of deer, that's happening to one of you guys.
I wouldn't expect anything less, and I would hope you do it.
Absolutely. So he gets in, and he's like, what's going on? And I'm like, you know.
A kind of a big deal.
Yeah, we got one
I
on the ground.
I shot a doe.
I was like, we got one on the ground. He's like, all right, cool. And I'm like, yep, it is cool. And didn't really want to feel like
just
let them
up.
Know. I didn't show them any pictures, didn't tell them what deer was or anything like that. And then Nick came back, and and I was like, let's go shoot it. Let's go grab them. And they're like, which one did you get? And I go, the Fork G2. They're like, what? I was like, yep. And again, the whole time, all summer and everything, the pictures of this deer, I'm saying he's probably going to make 180. That's what I'm guessing. And the mass kind of throws you off. The spread throws you off a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He doesn't photograph well as a live deer, but he's just enormous.
Should we break him down? Oh, I want you to finish your story. But I do want to break him down of what he is for the listeners. They'll see the cover art and stuff, but...
So
we had to move the other 30 pack.
So where this deer died, we could drive the truck right to him.
Mm-hmm.
So we get back out there, and it's dark now. And we get out there. We drive up to him. And the guys, we get out. We walk up to him. And, like, nobody said a word for, like, 2 minutes. We're just literally, like, 2 minutes. They're just like, holy fuck. Like, that thing is enormous. And then we just started taking pictures. And we got him in the truck and took him back. And then, you know... Even looking at him on the ground, I'm like, man, he may be 190. And you know, I'm not a certified scorer, but I think I'm within an inch or two. And so we get back to the cabin, and we get a tape out, and we're writing the numbers down and go inside and start adding them up, and I'm like, holy shit. You know.
Just keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah. I mean, the right antler score is 93 and change. As a typical.
As a typical.
And he's got 21 inside spread. And, you know, there's dozens of deer, maybe hundreds of deer that have been killed where you can say, if this or if that, he could have been a world record, right?
Yeah.
Well, if this deer matched his right side, if his left side matched his right, he'd be 206 and change.
You're almost the perfect world record.
It would be a Pope and Young world record.
I mean, this
Pope and Young world record. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's almost two different deer on each side.
Yeah. That's right. It is. Yeah.
So let's break him down as far as like what he is. Let's go with his right side first.
Yep. He's got 7 typical points. And that's pretty much all you can say. I mean, he's just a big,
he's
tall,
straight up picket fence. Man.
Yeah. He's a picket fence. And you know, the thing about this deer is he's got great mass, and he just carries it all the way
out. Well, and one thing, too, is what makes a big difference in a deer going 150, 160, like as a 10-pointer, is really good fours.
Right.
And a lot of guys overlook the fours. The fours, once you get up to that point, that's what pushes them, I feel, to the next. To make 170 as a typical 10, you got good fours.
That's right.
You got to have good fours. This buck's got a good G1, a good G2, a good G3. The fours are still going as good as a 3.
It's like almost, like a perfect.
And a solid 5. Yeah, a solid 5. Yeah. And then there's a 6.
Yeah.
And
you got to think about the main beam on it to fit all those points.
Yeah.
There's a countable 6.
There's a G6 on this deer.
There's a G6 on this deer.
Exactly.
God, damn.
See, that's the thing, you know. That's what people see 8-pointers. Like a buck that does 150 as an 8-pointer,
You gotta remember, he's got a G1, a G2,
yep,
and a G3.
Yeah, and a main beam.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so a lot of guys will see a framey 8 and be surprised, because I'm a measurer, so I measure a lot of big 8s that look like really giant bucks but don't measure like what they look, because the points aren't there.
Yeah.
Right. The frame is there,
right,
but the points aren't there. This thing's got frame and points.
Yes.
And you need
they just keep going
to go 200 inches.
Well, he didn't quite make it, but he's close.
Was he like 198?
Yeah, 198 and 7/8 is what I came up with.
You know, I'll be honest. If I shot a 198, I'd be like, yeah, it's fucking 200.
Yeah. <I'm not arguing.
laughs> Don't think a few buddies haven't said that.
Right.
My buddy Jimmy's like, you can't find another inch and an eighth in there? I was like, I could try.
Remeasure the G6.
Yeah. Right. Just remeasure one of the times. Come on.
Yeah, for sure. But no, like you said, I mean, he's got it going on. That right side's crazy big, and then the left side, he's just got a super huge G2 with a fork coming off of it. Really long
Giant
G3.
Giant 3, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, good mass all the way through.
He's beautiful, man.
I appreciate it.
That is a beautiful,
beautiful buck.
You sir are a killer, man. That's you a are
monster.
A killer.
They're all monsters.
It's I'm
Everybody
surprised. It's funny. Like, we started chatting on Facebook and then started texting and just kind of hit it off, you know. And I'm like, man, why don't you come in? Let's record. It'd be
For
fun.
Sure.
And of course, you're exactly how you said earlier. It's like, good big buck killers are all good people.
Oh yeah.
And I think you're part of our crew, man. Like, you could fit in with all of us. Like,
absolutely.
I wish Chandler was here to kind of mix up with us.
No kidding.
But no, man, congratulations. From big mule deer to giant whitetails. I mean, I'd love to see the mounts you have at your house.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, and swing by sometime.
There you go. I might have to. I'll bring some Busch Light.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But no, that's an absolute stud. Man, you know what? We didn't do the unpopular opinion segment. We can't forget that. We'll do it at the end this time. We'll switch
it up. We'll do it at the end, huh?
But yeah, might as well, right? I forgot we got so into whitetail talk right off the rip that we forgot to do our segment. But
I will say, one hell of a fucking season, man.
Dude, oh, absolutely. For sure. You
Unbelievable.
Know,
goddamn.
And definitely, you can't deny the fact that there's a lot of luck involved in that. Like, I didn't say, I'm going to go kill either of these two deer. Like, actually, the deer that I pegged and I did the right things on, I didn't get, you know.
Yeah.
He's still out there, hopefully. But
it was calculated, though.
It's calculated, and it goes back to
previous year's knowledge and build-up, right?
Some of that, for sure. But it goes back to my freshman basketball coach told me, you can't kill big deer if they're not there. You know, you just got to hunt places where big deer are at. And if you give them enough time, and, you don't push them too hard, you'll get a chance at them eventually.
Can we dive into that a little bit?
Sure.
As far as like pressure, entry and exit, I mean, that's got to be big, big things on your tactic list, right?
It's getting more important as the more that I hunt. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I used to be one of those guys, you know, that like the harder you work, the better you're going to do, right? So get in there and bust everything up and push and try to get in on them and do what you can do to you know, be in the woods.
Right.
And I don't know that that's the answer with my farm specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the more that I lay off of them, especially in the evenings, like if you go in when they're bedded and you're pushing them around, you're screwing yourself up.
Yeah.
The thing about our property is when we first got it, none of the like we didn't see bucks early season, hardly ever. We wouldn't see them in the summer. They'd show up in the rut and then they'd be gone. And we've done a little bit of, you know, timber stand improvement and putting in some native grasses and things like that. And worked really hard at trying not to put pressure on them all year long, you know.
Right, right.
Making a better habitat for the deer.
And I guess I'm sure you follow Don Higgins.
Don's a different class. I mean, he's just
right. He's where we all wish we were.
Absolutely.
Right.
But I like he did a video, and I haven't been a Don Higgins fan for a long time. Not because I didn't dislike something he did in the past, because I didn't really know too much about him. And that's just because who I followed was different at the time. But anyway, I've discovered his YouTube and I'm like always on Don Higgins' YouTube watching stuff. Well, he did a video about pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you got the guy that needs to go in and mow his food plots all the time and go and dig holes and bury kiddie pools and fill them full of water and go over here and put fucking 90 degree rubbing posts everywhere and going in there pissing in scrapes. Like, you feel like you're actively doing all this stuff. And I don't think he mentioned this, but on my head, you got guys that I'm going to go in there and put up this licking branch and do my vertical post and piss in this and kick around dirt and then post all these pictures to show everybody on the internet how badass of a deer hunter I am. I'm putting all this work in. When I see that, I'm personally like, ugh. Like, you're kind of going backwards
it's too much.
Doing the collar grab.
Yeah, doing the collar grab. Like, but you want to do that stuff because you feel like you're doing something.
Right.
But maybe you're not.
Well, you know, I do a lot of food plot stuff.
Yeah.
On the edges.
On the edges.
You got to give those deer space. You know, and that's a big thing Don Higgins talks about is the number one reason people don't kill big deer is too much human pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you argue with a guy that's killed 300-200-inch deer in the last 3 or 4 years, whatever it's
been? I try to argue with Ross all the time.
It doesn't work.
Well, Ross is wrong all the time.
Yeah, what do you think? What's your take?
What's my take? Take on just...
Oh, yeah, you just went
overdoing it? In my opinion, I like to pretend I'm surgically removing a deer from the woods, right, and I don't want to overdo it. So you save those spots.
That's a great...
God damn, is that your saying?
Did you just come up with that?
That's a good point. I mean, you only do surgery once, right?
Yeah. You don't want to go back in there again. It's
I don't want surgery again.
I don't know if I've ever heard that put that way. Have you?
No, I haven't. That's a great analogy.
I mean, honestly,
though.
Just
great analogy.
It's like your arm.
Leave those
spots. You don't want to re-break it.
Leave those spots where you know they're going to be good. I mean, it's easier to leave those spots alone that you know are good through years of experience in those spots. You know the big boys are going to be there, so you pick. I mean, I'm watching the weather, the barometric pressure, all that stuff. Like, that's and my work schedule and everything. But I've like I said in my last podcast, there talking about my big one I shot to end the season. I told my wife straight up. I'm like, today's the day. It's mm-hmm. just the way this rut's gone, the way the weather's been. I mean, I feel like I'm gonna catch this big boy on his feet.
It's time for surgery.
Yeah, it's time for surgery. So you go in and you like a ninja slip in. And hang and bang, and if you can pull a hang and bang and get yourself, I mean, so you kind of in those situations, a spot you haven't been in yet and just left alone, you're walking in, you're basically scouting.
Yeah,
that's your scouting is on your way in. It's a one in, one out. So, I don't want to pump this up bigger than it is, but I really feel like if you can walk in and scout the spot on your way in.
Using previous years' knowledge.
I'm not going to lie to you. I pissed in a scrape in that spot. Like, I before I climbed that tree and hang and bang. And
But I think what – so that's a little different than what I was using as an example earlier. Like, too much feeling like you're doing the right things. Sometimes guys don't realize it's
– I've done that, though. I've been there, and I've ran
30 – I have two.
30 trail cameras, and I'm in there pruning branches, and I'm in there planting food plots.
Every
and
weekend.
Running cameras something. Every weekend, and just all that stuff.
I think that's part of the process.
It's part of the learning curve.
That's a phase you go through to become a big buck killer.
And this year and last year, I've pulled back big time, and I literally didn't get my cameras out until November 1st. All my cameras – took a picture on November 1st this year, which is insane.
Hard to argue with your success.
But absolutely. I stayed out of the woods. Of course, I had an excuse. My arm was broke. I was down in the dirt.
It was a tough year.
But to be honest with you, I mean, going in there, and so I plant all these cameras on a really windy day, and then all these cameras are within a spot where I'm hanging a stand, or I have a stand already. So I'm pulling these cameras, like, the days that I decide the wind's right, and I go in and hunt them. At the end of the hunt, like, I pop that card and then I'm checking them as
smart,
I go.
Smart, yeah.
But
sorry, Todd. What we're we're jumping around this podcast more than usual. That's just because we're excited. Because
that's all right.
No, there's
kidding.
So much to talk about.
Absolutely.
But that's what I was getting to is like, and Ross, don't think that you did anything wrong by going off on that because that was great. Like, that's what I wanted to get into. You know,
absolutely.
But I gotta imagine you kind of go through the same thing with pressure and.
Yeah, I mean, you like we were saying, you don't want to push those deer off. Because once they're, especially the big ones, once they're gone, they go find a hole where nobody's bothering them, and they're not coming back. Like, there's a deer I killed, that 178, there's a deer I killed that 3 years in a row, we would not see that deer all year long. And then the week after first shotgun season, he'd show up on our farm every year. And then he'd stick around through the end of January, and then he'd be gone again. And the third year he did that, I killed him.
Were you anticipating that?
Was not anticipating him specifically, but I knew as soon as he showed up, I was like, in my mind, I'm going, hey, this is about the time that one deer shows up, you know, and he's
kind of figured out that pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, the Bill Winkies and the Don Higgins of the world that can say, okay, I'm going to go to this specific stand and I'm going to kill this specific deer
right.
today. That's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's another exactly. level of
calculated. I am not even close to that no. kind of a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm more of a...
But you play your cards right.
You play your cards right and you wait for that opportunity, right. you know?
Make it
you put yourself
moves.
In the spot.
Yeah, I mean, you don't go into a stand if the wind's wrong. You don't, you know...
As basic as that is, I feel like that's the number one thing that prevents people to be consistent on mature deer or deer they want to kill.
Sure.
Like, it. I still talk to guys. I'm like, I don't hunt the... You don't hunt the wind? Like, that's... sorry, guys, if you don't, but, like, to me, that is some of the... It's not... Maybe not day one, because when you first start, you don't always get that.
Yeah.
But once you become a bow hunter,
mm-hmm.
that is, like, the wind. But I learned a lot of guys think they know what how to hunt the wind when they don't.
I think a lot of guys if they've got a spot where they know there's a big one and they're gonna talk themselves into thinking that they can get away with going into a spot.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a rut. I'll be fine.
Yep. You got to be really, really picky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be careful. And if you go in there and you screw it up, you're done that year.
Mm-hmm.
You may get a chance on them next year, but you're
right.
Done.
Do you think the term "it'll be fine" fucks people on the deer they want to kill more than anything else?
Very well could. Very well could.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, you're not going to kill a high 90s buck.
Yeah.
We'll call him 200.
appreciate that.
Saying it'll be fine on a wind.
Right.
That's true.
You know?
But there, you know, there's some guys that are just next level killers, though. I mean, I've been lucky in my life to be able to kind of rub shoulders with a few of those guys. Like, one of the guys I work with, his cousin's good buddies with Stan Potts, and I got to go down and spend an afternoon just going through old photo albums with Stan and talking
That's
to him about
cool.
deer hunting.
Oh, dude, Stan's the man.
He is the man. He's super cool. Dude.
I love Stan.
Yeah.
That's one guy we haven't had on the show.
Mustache.
Oh, you
got to
get him. You got to get him, man. He's great.
I'm following his footsteps.
Give me
that wonky eye, and I'm good.
I'm sure I know a guy who has his phone number.
Yeah, we do. We talked to him on the phone at deer camp that one time. Remember?
He's a great
Missouri?
Guy.
Stan Potts?
Yeah. Philip called him.
Oh, yeah. I would know him.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Give me a second, folks.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Man.
I mean, I was like, it was.
I forgot we called him.
I was kidding when I was like, I think we probably know a guy who has his phone number.
Okay, oh, no, we do.
Of course we do.
But, yeah, and, you know, Barry Wenzel. I don't know if you know the Wenzels, the mm-hmm. Brothers of the Bow guys. I went to a thing he was doing one time, and we're walking around the timber, and this is February, March,
mm-hmm.
and he's showing us stands and why he's in these stands, and it's, like, super, super just basic stuff. And once you understand it, it's like, yeah, that's obvious. But until somebody tells you these things, it's like, shit, I would have never thought of that.
Right.
Like,
right,
he's
right.
talking about going in and, like, okay, you want to hunt this wind? Do you want to hunt this stand in a south wind? Go in on a south wind sometime later in the year, put a little smoke bomb up in your stand and see where
he wrote an article about that, didn't he?
He may have. I don't know.
Just sit there and watch the wind.
Yeah, and he's like, one time I did it, I put this smoke bomb up in the stand, and I was walking back out, and I go, you know, 300 yards this direction, turn, go down this other draw. Next thing you know, I'm smelling smoke.
You'd see
and he's
it,
like,
probably.
And it's the complete opposite direction.
Right.
You know, and he's like, no wonder why these deer are snorting at me over in this one draw when I'm
when
I'm
you
thinking.
Think you're hunting the right wind.
That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah.
That's next level shit.
I read.
Really?
That is really next level.
Seriously.
Man, I have to try and Google search that. I used hunting magazines in school or my jam. I read an article. It had to have been him.
Had to
Same thing. Set it on the platform. Get out. View, like, you know, look at it, see what it does once it hits a certain, like, almost like hit an eddy, and then change how it fucking leaves the eddy and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, because, I mean, when you think about it, you see a stream going, water going down in a stream or a creek or whatever, and it hits a rock and it's swirling and stuff. Mm-hmm. Air's doing the same thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it does it does it quicker and more.
Way quicker, yeah exactly.
Yeah, so. Quicker and more, for sure.
Quicker and more is the best way.
Dude, I wage brain, I hear you.
Yeah,
God, I'm
thinking hard here.
I better lit up on smoke bombs this year.
Yeah, stop at those little 4th of July fireworks stands and just buy them.
Snakes and sparklers.
They're the only ones we like. We're going to just start, let's just start selling smoke bombs and work now.
Oh.
See, someone's going to steal it.
Shit.
You said it. You already said it.
I already said it.
You
but
ruined
it. We know. We'll call it right here. You are a bitch if you steal our idea, so we said it here.
Yep. Patent pending.
Deer smoke bombs.
Patent pending. Scentless smoke bombs.
I can't say that, but I did.
Yeah.
You don't know. I'll file one right after this podcast. Patent pending.
It's not released yet, so.
No, man. Dude, what a killer season. Thanks for bullshitting
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing season.
I was going to bring up one other thing, late season hunting quick before we go, because
Absolutely.
We've been having questions from listeners like, hey, you guys going to do any late season stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And of course,
big time.
Scheduling is just tough. Ross, you shine in late season. That's your time. I
wasn't a huge fan of late season hunting until I got some properties with some crop and basically stuff deer like late season. Todd, do you feel that late season hunting is something you enjoy? Do you? I feel like it depends on your property too, right? You know.
Yeah, it does. But you know, specifically, like for me, when I'm planting food plots, a lot of times I'm not thinking about, oh, can I kill deer in this plot? What I'm thinking is, I want to keep deer on my farm with this plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that Winky talks about is you want to give your deer a lot of options, right? And it could just be, it may not be that you're going to go kill deer on a spot, but it may be a plot that you're giving deer an opportunity to escape a bully buck that's on the next ridge or something like that, or just giving them a free zone for them to come out. And
or even like neighbors pressure on one of their cornfields or whatever it is.
Totally. So a lot of my food plots are with that in mind, and especially that January, February, March time frame, I plant a lot of turnips on my place. A lot of turnips. So late season, it's dynamite.
They're hammering.
And Ross, you're a big guy for late season. So is Clint Casper.
That.
He loves
late season. That late season, man. That's, I mean, like I've said before, I mean, there's guys out there that really like that, and I do. I mean, I've had a lot of really good encounters that first 5 days of October where you're catching them off that summer pattern, and then it goes into rut, and it's, I've been in the struggle. I mean, the rut struggle sucks when you can't, you're hunting your spots, you sit there, you put the hours in, you spend 84 hours in a tree, and between October 6th until, you know, November 12th, and it's just unbelievable how you haven't had an opportunity to kill a deer yet. You feel like you're just driving it in, but I feel like you can pattern a deer late season. You get out there, you get that food, and then, I mean, deer slaves of their bellies, so I mean, when they're hungry, they need to eat. So if you've got food, they're coming, and then you just lay back and wait and till the big boy shows up. And the really cool thing about late season is those deer that you had in velvet, for me, I guess, on my pieces of property, the deer that I got pictures of in velvet disappear and you don't ever see them, but then they always come back late season when when it's close to Christmas or whatever. Now it's like, okay. Or you even get a new rambler rolling through. Just just coming around and hanging out.
Hitting your food source you put work into. And
so
he's hungry.
I like that late, cold. I mean, they're driving to that food. So
do you think that you can get away with a little bit more late season?
Well, if it's cold enough and you're trying to open a window or you're trying to move in your stand, I mean, that popping and cracking, I mean, are you talking about like...
I'm talking about just like you can... it seems like... a lot of times late season stuff, what I like to do is get in on a food plot. And typically what I've got my setups is they're coming out of timber to a food plot on the edge, and then they're going to work through that food plot and go out to the big ag fields behind me.
Yep.
Right. So most of the time I'm either going to have someone come drive in and spook the deer out of the field for me.
Yep.
Or if they get out far enough and I, you know, certain setups, I can get into my truck, but I still have to drive out through them and I'm going to spook them. But it seems like they're back the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Because again, there's been lots of times where I'll call my brother, and I know my dad's loader tractor's plugged in for chores the next morning. And I'm like, hey, you got to come get me, get in the loader, get in that JD, and come back here and get me.
Yeah. Hop in the gleaner, come
pull
back.
Pull right up. I'm like, dude, pull.
Don't break down on your way, though.
It's pretty cold. I don't know if I'll start.
I'm like, dude, pull right up to the tree. Like, this is my spot right here. This is where I'm at. Yeah. And pull right up to me. I'm going to jump on the footstep of the tractor, and I'm just keep driving
right out. Yeah,
and yeah, you're right. I mean, they're always back. Yeah, you're not blowing them up.
Do you think it's just because at that time of the year, like they have to come back?
Right.
You
know, I think so.
You know, and whether it's after dark or right before dark or whatever, like they're gonna come back because it's like you said, Ross, even like slaves to their belly.
And like what Ross said earlier, I mean, it's not human pressure. They're used to tractors.
They've never been ran down by a gleaner.
Right.
You know?
It's just a gleaner, we're fine.
I don't know. Did you guys see that one on Facebook that supposedly somebody ran over with a combine and you could see its shoulder working and stuff? Yeah, like that was nasty.
I don't think that was a combine, unless it was like a flex draper with a cutter bar or something, you know?
No,
like,
that had to be he ducked underneath a barbed wire fence or something.
Oh man, I don't know. Looked like somebody was catch and release backstraps.
Yeah. It's like someone just threw like a hatchet and just cut them right.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, on a late season hunt, I'll shut it off after this. But
no, you're good.
So
thank you for bringing it back.
The 2016, I killed that Flyer 2 buck. That was the last really good buck until this year that just went crazy. But that 2016, Austin was with me in the tree or in the blind. And one night that buck that I ended up shooting, camera light was failing. Like we were right on the cutoff as far as shooting light,
pushing it.
And I actually brought my Primos coyote howler with me, and I opened the window and I just blew that thing, just barked and howled and did all kinds of stuff. And just, I mean, I blew every deer off the field. I mean, yeah. And he looked right at us. He had it on camera and everything. It was just like, and he looked right at us and just jetted out. I thought, that's smart. Totally screwed that deer up, that's right. For sure. And it wasn't, well, I don't know, 5 days, 6 days later, that deer, I mean, he'd been in and out of there, according to the camera, but the wind was wrong. So he came back, and we ended up shooting him.
They hear coyotes every day, that's, man. That's awesome.
Yep.
I mean, I've heard that, too.
Scared the shit out of that
deer. Our buddy Dana Pace had his son come in and howl. Pew, pew, pew. I think Bill Winky's done it, like, late season. Come in, have somebody run a chainsaw on the field edge because they're just used to hearing that shit. Yeah. And then he makes his exit. And I think he killed the buck he was hunting, like, a day or two later after doing that stuff. So it's just tactics that at a glance you think, man, that's screwing it up. But it's they've never been killed by a chainsaw. They hear chainsaws all the time. They hear coyotes and dogs barking in the distance and – yeah, gleaners struggling to start and driving by and shit.
Putting along.
Somebody's got a gleaner that's just like about to quit our podcast forever.
Oh, yeah.
they're fine.
But right. No, it is. Late season, man, is interesting. And it sucks if your property doesn't have the food. That's where Big Time can help you out. Big Time. See what I did? Didn't mean to do that. It's corny.
Big Time can help you out Big Time?
Yeah. Yeah.
nice.
Is that what you're saying?
We know what you're saying.
There's going to be a lot of people that already have been writing in, but Will is, it's like, well, what if my deer's not hitting the food in time and it's dark by the time it gets there? And then, but I don't know. There's a whole lot to control it because it would go with your pressure earlier in the year.
Yeah, right? I think that's one of those situations where if you've got good food and they're coming out late, you got to wait for one of those days where it's going to be negative 10 that night. You got to wait for a super cold day because those deer are going to have to come out and feed before that.
Good point. Good tip, too.
Yeah.
So it would be basically you almost have to get close as you can without getting too close and time your weather.
For sure.
Less is more in that situation.
And freeze your ass off.
That's
Hey, don't say it'll be fine. It probably won't be.
You got to pick your day.
Pick your day.
Yep.
Look at DeerCast.
Yep.
Listen to Mark Drury.
Here's a pro tip for you, too. Well, not a pro tip, but...
You're a pro, dude. You killed the two.
It's a pro tip.
So what I do on my food plots is I like to have about a 10-foot, 12-foot wide swath of switchgrass, which, you know, you got to be thinking a little bit years ahead to do it like this. But you get some good switchgrass growing, and you get a ground blind in there, and those cold, cold, cold January Jays... You can have a little Mr. Heater in your ground blend with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're nice and toasty. Mm. No big deal.
Now we're talking.
Hands warm.
That is a pro tip. That's an experienced pro tip there.
Yeah.
That's an old man. I'm getting into old age.
That's that comfortable.
That's right. Late season, I got like 13 hot hands in my pockets.
Yeah.
All through your body.
In my boots and my shirt.
Did you see your crack?
Did you see the post in the working class bow owners group? The Sitka core warmer.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
The thing is about Sitka, we joke about it. Other pages joke about it. Our group tears Sitka.
It's funny, okay.
But like some of our, like Clint Casper works with Sitka, whereas it, you know, like it's all in good fun. Like, listen, we can joke around, still have a good time. But it's a Sitka core. It's a butt plug, but it's like packaged like Sitka made it.
Yeah, they it's like it, camouflage.
They call it a Sitka core warmer.
Battery.
I mean, it probably worked, but.
I mean, it probably worked.
Doug's going to test it out.
You're sick.
You guys are freezing? I mean, I'm pretty warm over here. It's getting hot here.
Doug didn't think it was a joke. He actually ordered one.
He bought one.
Should be here tomorrow.
He went to the Lion's Den and picked one up.
I went to the store and it wasn't there.
So they didn't have Sitka, but...
I had to go to the Lion's Den.
I paid next day shipping on that bitch.
Overnight.
Well, I tell you what, that was a hell of a bunch of stories there. I mean, you had three.
Ross just was like, back to the podcast.
Good transition.
I mean, like, three giants this year.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All of them kind of had some cool stuff along with them, too. It wasn't just to go out and shoot them deal. So.
No killer stories. All right, here's what I think we do. We close out on the unpopular opinion segment, new thing. And the unpopular opinion segment, didn't know it was an unpopular opinion until I thought about it this holiday season. And Some people might think when you're decorating your man cave.
Our guest actually brought it up.
I know. I wasn't going to try to put him on blast, but I guess we are.
We are.
Oh, no, no, no. Well, there it is. So
he,
it
is, I guess the unpopular opinion is it's tacky to put a rubbed up tree in your house as a Christmas tree.
With a mount.
With a mount. With a mount. Yeah. Give us your thoughts.
For me, Christmas for me is so much about my kids. Like, my girls would kill me if I brought a Christmas tree in and rubbed it up like a deer. Like, they get enough deer in their life as it is.
Yeah.
It just needs to be a little bit of separation there for them.
They don't need the Charlie Brown tree by cause of deer.
That's right. Exactly. So, I mean.
Do you run a real tree or a fake tree?
We go real.
Real.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real tree.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Real tree?
So, all right. We'll double down. Real tree or fake tree? And what do you think about the rubbed up Christmas tree? Ross?
Okay. So, I say don't base your main Christmas tree for the kids, the family, the everybody on something like that. I would say if you have a full-bodied whitetail mounted and he is making a rub on a fucking old rubbed up tree,
yeah,
then, and you throw a little bit of spritz on it and a few lights and whatever, and then plug it in just for the season,
yeah,
but it's already in the corner. Like
it's part
a,
of your
it's
mount.
A, it's right. A done. Yeah, it's, yeah, it's just a mount that you just decorated for Christmas. You're cool. Outside of that, no.
I love the specifics.
Well, yeah, that was very.
We, just, I mean, we holiday based.
This is how you get away with it, or you don't. I mean, what the fuck?
You know, I'm with you, man. I'm with you, Eric. Opinions, thoughts.
We run a fake tree.
Right.
Well, my wife does.
Like a full-blown, real fake, like a full-size?
Full-blown, full-size fake tree.
About an eight-footer.
Eight-foot.
Right, classic.
Yep, almost to the ceiling.
Classic.
Maybe a seven-footer.
Well, yeah, seven, yeah, give or take.
Okay. I would say I'm not for it.
For the rubbed-up tree?
For the rubbed-up tree, I'm not for it. Like, if you have a man cave like Ross's, where the theme is deer and critters and stuff, absolutely go ahead, do it. But your main tree in your house, like the main attraction, nah.
Okay. I was going to go last, but I'm going to go next so Doug can follow up on me.
So you throw in, yeah, like this rubbed up tree short, and lean it in the corner, and then you just like 3-inch lag this buck.
I go 4-inch
right
legs.
Up against the wall. Okay, four. Yep, yep. So run her right into the wall and just
from the outside
a,
the wall.
Stick a shorter mount next to this leaned up tree. Yep. Yeah, okay, so, I got it.
Here's where I'm at. I'm a fake tree guy. My wife is a real tree. Person, no, the came from. Here's the thing. I'm scared to death of the fire hazard with all my deer mounts.
Okay.
That's my thing with a real tree.
What are you lighting it with?
What's that?
I mean, like, what are you putting lights on? I mean, are you, like, light bulbs on this tree and you're
the
scared about that?
Electrician's coming out right now.
Hey, it's a real tree that's going to dry out. You ever lit up a Christmas tree?
Yeah.
They light up. I just don't want to happen.
Like, yeah.
I don't want, like, an accident.
Wait, oh, have I?
Accidents.
Yeah, you spray it down with water. You got a backpack sprayer or just like a hand pump sprayer? Just spray it down
too
with
much
water.
Work. I'm going to do that shit with the fake trees.
Put it in the box.
Never mind. I'm going to leave this alone. Just talk.
I don't really have an opinion on the rubbed up tree, but I have been seeing the holiday posts. I'd say your man cave, it's fine. In your house, nah.
Yeah.
But if you have a full mount, by all means, put some lights on that sucker.
Bingo. Kurt nailed it.
But don't put Santa hats on your deer.
Please don't.
That was going to be one of my questions.
I'm not a fan of the Santa hats.
What do you think
deer.
About?
Hey, that goes
what do you think about
us.
Decorating your mounts?
Nope.
Because I've seen a lot of people.
I'm not
do
a
it.
Fan personally.
I'm my wife. Does
my mounts are
year.
Sacred. She does.
Oh yeah.
Doug's going home taking Santa hats enough. Off his deer.
I feel like it
well,
just takes away
Doug's
from
like
the animal a little bit.
I agree. You know? I'm with you.
Well, my opinion, not cool. Basically, is I live by myself. In a big ass house, and I do zero Christmas shit at all. So there's no Christmas tree. There's no nothing.
Doug's Christmas
I got
tree.
Beer,
is the
I
old,
got beer in the fridge, and I'm good.
The Christmas tree at Doug's house, the old fir growing out in his yard.
Yeah. There's a tree out in the woods somewhere. That's a Christmas tree, right?
Yeah.
He just has a random tree out in the middle of the woods that has lights on it.
It's like the only thing that looks anywhere near a tree is the bush light.
Yeah. That's it.
That's
all
it.
I got.
Well, cool. That's the podcast.
Yep.
Want to close out with anything? Any shout-outs? Anything like that?
No. I mean,
give us
appreciate
something
you guys bringing me in.
Yeah, give us something. YouTube video, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The 179-inch buck on October 30th, it's totally raw footage. But
cool.
Don't let your kids watch because there's a couple of F-bombs thrown in at the end after I shot him. So
they're cool that I'm sure they heard this.
Yeah.
I'll put the link to that. You have to send it to me. I'll put it in the description of the podcast.
I can do that.
They can find it there. Ross?
I'm good, man.
Doug?
Awesome season. Congrats to you.
Thank you.
And good luck to everybody out there still. I know I'll be grinding, so it is what it is.
Eric? That's right. Yeah, hell of a season, man. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Three awesome, amazing deer.
No kidding.
The dream season, man.
That's the dream season.
That's fucking crazy.
Right, yeah.
My closing, thanks for coming in, man. Appreciate it. The conversation was fun. I think we have a lifelong friend now. Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
You'll probably try and leave this family eventually, but
you can't.
You can't.
Can't leave. You can't.
It's a cult.
All right, I'm in. It's a cult.
You're stuck now, buddy. Good. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Good luck out there. You got some left in you. I know you do. Keep your head up. And go shoot your bow. We love you.